if you live in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area and you are in need of this kind of support, you can go to the Whitman Walker Clinic. They offer it there. If not, you can look on the web for any straight partner support group anywhere in the country. Thanks again, John Craig, for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark.
That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in next week. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. Portions of America's anti-terror law were struck down by a federal judge as unconstitutional, ruling that courts must be allowed to review and oversee cases in which the government orders Internet service providers to give them records without notifying customers. Today's ruling also included the judge's evaluation of the rewritten Patriot Act as offensive to fundamental constitutional principle. The law was challenged by the American Civil Liberties Union in that it allowed the FBI to demand records without the type of court order needed for other investigative searches. The Justice Department also ruled that Internet service providers should be able to charge a fee for priority web traffic. German authorities are searching for more suspects who may be connected to a possible foiled terrorist attack. German and American targets were part of that plot. 11 New Jersey officials have been arrested in an FBI corruption probe, including a mayor and state lawmakers. The arrests were connected to insurance contracts for local governments. Israeli President Shimon Peres says he is more optimistic about the prospect of peace with the Palestinians. Peres met today with Pope Benedict and Italian leaders in Rome. Israeli warplanes crossed into Syrian territory this morning and bombed a deserted area. That's according to Syrian news agencies. Syria fired ground-to-air missiles but did not strike those fighter jets. In Nicaragua, the death toll from Hurricane Felix has reached 40, with another 60 people reported missing. The remains of the Category 5 storm continue to dump rain throughout Central America. A pair of strong earthquakes rattled the capital of Taiwan earlier today. The first measured 6.5 magnitude and the second measured 5.7. There were no immediate reports of damage or injury in and around the city of Taipei. Hurricane Henriette was downgraded to a tropical storm after it slammed into Sonora, Mexico last night. Henriette claimed 7 lives when it first made landfall in Baja. That was on Tuesday. Authorities have expanded the search for missing millionaire adventurer Steve Fawcett. His small plane disappeared over the Nevada desert 4 days ago. The search could span 10,000 square miles and take up to 1 week or more. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll take a look at science and business news just ahead.
Tired of all the griping? Got to get away from the propaganda of the left and the right? Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific right here on the Quality News Network for America Back on Track with me, your correspondent, Tony Seaton. We don't wallow in the dialectic between the donkeys and the elephants. America Back on Track rises above the fray, representing the people's right, the people's need to know. America Back on Track from the Quality News Network puts the news in context, delivers scintillating interviews and commentary, all part of a conversation with America. America Back on Track is for information-hungry Americans who know how vital it is to the health of the country that the citizens know the facts. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 AM in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Black women are almost twice as likely to die of breast cancer than white women. That's a new study providing clues to the biological cause of the high death rate. Black women's tumors apparently fail to respond to commonly given hormone treatments. In Washington, D.C., tens of thousands of Chinese-made condoms distributed in an anti-AIDS campaign have been rejected now. Packaging of the condoms has been found defective. The Mortgage Bankers Association reports that this spring the number of homeowners who received foreclosure notices was up to a record high. It's the third quarter in a row that the number has set an all-time high. Apple Incorporated CEO Steve Jobs is extending an olive branch to the first customers who bought the company's iPhones. A recent $200 price drop prompted complaints from those early buyers, and Jobs is offering them a $100 store credit and an apology. The Small Business Administration says half the nation's federal agencies failed to meet their small business contracting goals so far this year. Reports issued every 6 months designed to hold agencies accountable for accurate reporting. Gold at $704.60 an ounce. That's up $13.90. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 57 points at 13,363, NASDAQ up 8 points, S&P 500 up 6. And there's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Okay, don't you stop America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome to this Thursday evening edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Glad to be with you. Hope you're as happy where you are. Yes, indeed. 6.5 minutes after the hour. And you know what I think we're going to do this evening? We got caught up in the coming attack on Iran yesterday evening. And I don't know about you. The whole thing, well, you know, if you were listening last night, you know, the whole thing just makes me feel icky. Makes me feel awful. Makes me feel sort of hopeless and helpless, if you will. Knowing that there are people sitting in Washington, D.C., getting paid with our money to contemplate the murder of innocents. It somehow seems contrary to what this country should be about. But regardless of that, we did spend a whole lot of time on that, about 3 hours last night. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to roll it back, if you will. Sherman will set the Wayback Machine for prayer meeting. And we'll catch up on some of the prayer meeting news that we would have otherwise covered had we not gotten quagmired in the coming slaughter that will be the administration's attack on Iran. With that in mind, I wanted to share a couple of things with you right off the bat. And, of course, you know, whatever's grabbing you is open as well. You are more than welcome to bring your own subjects to the table. There's no limitation on being able to do that. You know that. This isn't one of those things where you have a say-so once a week like Right Wing Hate Radio does. This is your ideas, your issues, all the time. Okay? But with that, I wanted to a couple of stories to share with you, most particularly this one. Our good friend Sue on Big Coal River in southern West Virginia sent this one along. I used to have a life that required me to commute about 50 miles to Charleston and back every day. And going down that road, you would pass a church in a place called Shrewsbury. Shrewsbury, S-H-R-E-W-S-B-U-R-Y. And they've got a Church of God there. First Assembly of God there at Shrewsbury. No, Shrewsbury Church of God. I got it backwards there. I had it right the first time. And they had one of those signboards at the church, like you're forever seeing with some little saying, new saying every week. One grabbed me once upon a time for its sheer, utter, just bloody sleaziness. And what it said, just driving down the road on my way into Charleston one day, and there on the left-hand side of the road is the Shrewsbury Assembly of God. And it says on its signboard, "Most people use duct tape to fix things. God used nails." I know. And, you know, these people, I don't know what they do. I don't know. Assemblies of God, you know, maybe they worship Jimmy Swaggart. I don't know. They may roll on the floors and drink strychnine and cuddle with snakes and speak in tongues. God himself doesn't know what they're talking about when they get going. But, you know, they're really holier than thou kind of outfit. Well, it turns out the senior pastor of Shrewsbury Church of God is a man by the name of Sandy Martin Cook. 48 years old. He's from Bell, West Virginia. And he's looking at 3 counts of sexual assault by a person of trust. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are also something like 44 counts of sexual abuse coming. And what he did... Wow, this one's kind of... About a decade ago, he lured young men who were members of his church into quiet, stealthy places, cars, whatnot, and had some or another form of sex with them. At the time, the victims were all between the ages of 12, that would be 12, and 17. The sexual incidents took place at his home or in his vehicle at various spots along U.S. Route 60, which is the road that runs basically between Charleston and Fayette County, West Virginia, which is, you know, where I am now. But it gets creepier. In 1994, one of the boy's parents found out about what Sandy Martin Cook was doing to their son, and they reported it to the Shrewsbury Church of God. They held a meeting at the church, and the allegations were withdrawn, and the authorities weren't notified. "He would never do any such thing. I'm sure your son is sick." You know, that kind of thing. Here's the sicker part. Trooper E.B. McClung of the State Police South Charleston Detachment says that based on their investigation, they think there are more victims. And they are imploring those victims to come forward and seek justice against this man of God. He's standing charged with 44 counts of felony third-degree sexual assault. In West Virginia, that's what most people recognize as statutory rape. It happens when you have sex with someone who is under the age of consent and is therefore, as a matter of law, deemed incapable of consenting to a sex act. He was arrested, and they allowed him his phone call. And he said, "I'm just scared to death. Can I ask my wife, how's my mother?" Whew. Mercy. but it gets better. Okay. Now, on 44 occasions, this complaint alleges he had sex with little boys. This servant of Christ. 44 times in his car and in his home, this married man, this monster. But wait, it gets worse. They always get worse, don't they? Sure they do. At the same time that he was serving as senior pastor for the Shrewsbury Church of God, this guy was also the head of the cardiac catheterization lab at Charleston Area Medical Center Memorial Hospital. That's right. He was head of the cardiac catheterization lab. Dear God. You can only wonder. You can only sit and shiver in sort of a sort of stunned horror. Head of the cardiac catheterization lab? I don't think he was a physician. I think that's more of an administrative position. The Shrewsbury Church of God is affiliated with the Church of God of Cleveland, Tennessee. Their former church building burned, and the late Carlos Seabolt donated the land for the current church and $100,000 toward building it. I wonder if the late Carlos Seabolt envisioned that his church would be used as a cruising ground for the rape of little boys. You just don't know, do you? You just don't know. So that's a jumping off place for us this evening. Sandy Martin Cook, 44 counts of third-degree sexual assault and 3 counts of sexual assault by a person of trust. And it was going on not 40 miles from where we live. A question, a legitimate question. What do we do with these people? What do we do with these people? How does society deal with a predator who uses religion as the cover by which he executes his sickness? Obviously, taking it to the church is not going to be sufficient, because when that did happen, the parents were talked out of going to the authorities. Well, I promise he won't rape your little boy no more. Now just get out of here. This is God's house. There were masturbation incidents, oral incidents, and yes, even anal incidents with these little boys over the course of years. Years. And day in and day out, you've got to put yourself into context with a story like this. Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, people put on their best polyester suits, and women do their best beehive hairdos. And they go into the Shrewsbury Church of God Sunday morning, Sunday evening, and Wednesdays. They go through the door every time the door is open. And Sandy Martin Cook stands in the pulpit and says, God wants you to support this church. When the church turns out to be little more than a pimping operation for Sandy Martin Cook's desire to do little boys. What do you do with Sandy Martin Cook? What do you do with the Shrewsbury Church of God that talked a parent out of filing a complaint as far back as 13 years ago? Good God. Burn that place to the ground. Start over. Put up a real whorehouse and do something, you know, do something public-spirited. Ugh. Most people use nails to fix, use duct tape to fix things. God used nails. Brrr. If that doesn't send shivers down your spine, I don't know what will. Let's go talk to Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Reasonably well. It's been kind of a warm day, I'll tell you that.
It has been, very much so. I was out in it a little bit, and that was enough.
Me too. You know, obviously, in this particular church, instead of saying, let us pray, pray being spelled with an A, this guy apparently spelled his version of the word pray to P-R-E-Y.
It would seem so.
And obviously, these people are using duct tape to put over their mouths. And that's the only thing I can say to something like that. You know, I just can't even respond really to your questions about what do you do.
Well, I mean, can you imagine the congregation? These are the kind of people that go out and scream and holler and raise a ruckus over the poor little fetuses. And they were first among equals, these Church of God types to these fundamentalists to cast stones at Bill Clinton for consensual grown-up sex.
Well, you know, and as we segue into Bill Clinton, I saw Clinton on TV today, and he was talking about the senator who is in some trouble about his extra-vehicular activities in an airport restroom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this guy, the senator, was one of the leading people who wanted Clinton nailed him. And yet he was out here doing all this kind of stuff. But Bill Clinton turned the other cheek and simply said, I hope that this man, I realize that he is probably at the end of his political career or approaching the end of it. And the only thing Clinton said, and I admired him for having said it, he said, I hope that the man's family can at least remain intact. And I thought that showed a hell of a lot of class on Bill Clinton's part to say that, considering what he had been through for having, committed his own indiscretion, which he shouldn't have, but nonetheless.
Well, considering
his, I thought it was extremely magnanimous of Clinton to say that.
It was, and it was extremely decent, and that's the way the man operates. All through his own ordeal, when Newt Gingrich was getting caught doing his own page, if you will, when it came out about Henry Hyde breaking up an entire family, when one after another his Republican detractors were caught out with their own peccadilloes, still, you know, it wasn't the Republicans doing that. I mean, it wasn't Bill Clinton or the Clinton White House outing those people. It was their own evil that did them in. And he didn't. And he didn't come out and he didn't gloat and say, "See, I told you." None of that.
No, he didn't. And you know, it says a great deal about Bill Clinton. And I think what is really what the man is made of. And you know, going to another Democratic president, it was just Joe. That just came on before you did. And I'm looking at a copy of his official portrait, John F. Kennedy. And, you know, I've thought about John Kennedy and his indiscretions in the bedroom and things like that. And you know, when I look at the way John Kennedy grew up and his father, I mean, those boys, when they brought a date home to the Kennedy compound, they couldn't even have a date in the house without being warned to lock their doors at night because the old man would be prowling the halls and trying to get into the son's bedrooms.
Ew.
Sleep with her date. That's right. I mean, that's in a number of books that have been written about Joe Kennedy. And I can really understand John Kennedy's perhaps sexual indiscretion, you know, the way that he grew up, because his father encouraged that kind of behavior. As a matter of fact, when JFK was at Harvard, he belonged to a group called the Muckers Club. And the old man club said, well, if I belonged to it, the M would have been changed to an F.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just the way he operated. I mean, Joe Kennedy would nail anything that walked, practically. I mean, that was just his way. And you saw what type of example that the father set before all those boys. And, you know, it's just amazing that they grew up to be as productive as they did. And, you know, all things considered, I'm not interested in what's going on in the presidential bedroom. I'm interested in what is going on Oval Office and how that man is doing his job.
And I think your position is borne out as being the correct one, Jim, because, well, what's going on in the Oval Office right now is it's hard to get around calling it extremely deleterious to the well-being of the country, downright destructive to the well-being of the country. But, you know, but George Bush hasn't had illicit sex with anybody, so there's, you know, you can't get any Republicans interested in maybe impeaching him.
Well, one thing about it, I'm really glad that this senator, who is now the object of this investigation, has decided to try to repudiate these charges. Because I know when this thing came out on him, Clay is his name from Idaho?
Craig.
I mean, the Republicans, they didn't even let him leave the door of the bus, or even the back door of the bus. They threw him out of the window.
Yeah, they did.
Under the wheels of the bus.
And the contrast between him and David Vitters is quite profound, isn't it?
Well, you know, I'm just glad that this guy's going to try to fight this, to just see exactly what he can, how he can explain his behavior, because I'm sure that the Republican National Committee, when he made the statement that he's going to repudiate his resignation, just went, oh my God, well, this one just won't be silenced, and I'm sure it's not going to put them in a very good light. So I say, go for it, Mr. Clay, and just try to explain your behavior as you try to solicit this plainclothesman bathroom of a public airport.
Well,
but yet, you know,
it's interesting, though, Jim, because his staff has now come out. I mean, this is positively Aesopian, if you will. His staff has now come out and said, well, you know, he was probably going to resign at the end of this term anyway. Isn't that the fox staring at the grapes and going, ah, well, you know, I knew those were sour to begin with.
They said, what now?
Yeah, his staff has now said that he probably wouldn't have run for re-election anyway. He probably would have stepped down.
Well, you know, the thing about this fellow, Mr. Clay, is this is not the only incident, and I'm sure you've voiced this on your program before. I mean, these peccadilloes go back to the early 80s.
Oh, yeah, the voice recording of the guy who says he was solicited for oral sex in the Union Station bathroom, sure.
Right, and, you know, it's just incredible how these people can sit in judgment on others, and then when one of their own gets caught, they try to sweep it under the rug, or they try to somehow justify it, or I don't know what. I just don't understand how their thought processes work. Maybe I'm the one who needs to have a lobotomy and have somebody to, and their knitting needles through my ocular orbit, but I don't think so. And you know, these are some of the same people who get so upset about this thing with partial birth abortion.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about this Assemblies of God congregation down in Shrewsbury, Jim. You know, these people would these are the kind of people that got really worked up and were thoroughly used and abused by the Republican National Committee machine, and encouraged to get out and vote on one issue. Meanwhile, at the same time, their beloved preacher is out doing little boys.
Exactly. And, you know, they are very much concerned with cranial injuries to fetuses, but yet they will sit there and justify the cranial injuries that were done to Matthew Shepard when he was crucified on a picket fence in Laramie.
Yes.
I just don't understand that kind of thinking. Now, if you can perhaps guide me in a direction in which I can understand it, I would appreciate it.
Not going to try, Jim. Not going to try, because I can't get it either, except to say that these people are, you know, these people and their religion, because I don't deem it anything related to the message of Yeshua. These people are just abjectly evil, and they under the cover of religion, they manifest their evil in the forms of their hate. And to this, you know, to this moment, even as we speak, Jim, there is some right-wing fundamentalist out there screaming that the hate crimes legislation would infringe on their First Amendment right to despise people for how they have sex.
I don't understand that either. I mean, you know, I don't care what goes on in their bedrooms, and if they want to look in my bedroom with whatever device they have, well, the only thing they're going to see is me reading or watching TV or listening to your program and two cats, and that's it. And if that's how they get their rocks off, then that's fine. They can, they're welcome to do it. I hope they'll just pay me royalties.
Jim, I love the way you look at things, but sadly,
you know, but I mean,
no,
good Lord, I just don't understand that kind of convoluted, twisted thinking that they think they can exalt themselves above somebody else when they themselves are so much further down. It's just low.
What it boils down to, and I'm playing amateur psychologist here, Jim, what it boils down to is these right-wing fundamentalists are scared to death, mind you, that if this nation comes to terms with the civil rights of roughly 10% of the population, that they in turn will have to confront their own sick, twisted, repressed sexuality. You see, if we lived in a tolerant society where someone was free to be gay or be straight and go into a house of worship and worship as they saw fit and be married or have communion or baptism or any of the other sacred offices, then these people would have to confront the fact, you know, from congregation to congregation, or from group to group, anywhere you go, you know, count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 next to you, and one of those people's gay.
Right.
And they would have to come to grips with the fact that there is a whole bunch of sexual confusion and sexual misery right in their own midst, and they are too weak-minded and too evil-minded to want to do that hard work.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, this type of hypocrisy, and, of course, as you well know, I've read a great deal and studied a great deal about life in Germany under Hitler and the Third Reich, and you'll find the same type of hypocrisy during that 12-year regime that you're finding here, in which, you know, the Nazis, of course, put pink triangles and yellow triangles and every other color of the rainbow they could put on people because they didn't subscribe to the party line. But yet many of these same people who killed and murdered and gassed were guilty of the same types of sexual indiscretions and things of that nature, but yet that was because they, you know, raised their right hands to the Nazi salute and supported Adolf. And, you know, I just wonder what would happen if somebody appeared into Adolf Hitler's bedroom and took a look at some of the stuff that reputedly went on there. My God, he was just a garden variety sexual deviant himself, of what I've heard.
Flies on the wall weren't safe.
Huh?
Flies on the wall weren't safe.
I mean, good Lord, the things that I understand that Hitler has been, accused of, and there was even a wartime report done by Bill Langer about Hitler and his sexual preferences and things that he liked to do. I mean, it's just, it's not fit for this program, but I think you probably know what I'm talking about.
I do know. I've read about that stuff, yeah.
My Lord. I mean, I just don't understand, and it just boggles the mind. And but I was very, very proud of Bill Clinton for what he said today. And when I look at JFK, I can understand the problems he may have had with his desire for sexual conquest or fulfillment given the type of lifestyle into which he was brought in by his father and the example that he had to grow up under. And, you know, I'm not trying to justify any of that kind of thing, but I can understand JFK and Bill Clinton a hell of a lot more easily than I can this particular pastor that you've referenced earlier in your opening statements and some of the other hypocrisies that we have known about that have come by or come from these so-called leaders of the right-wing moral majority and the family values people. I mean, the hypocrisy smells all the way to high heaven.
Unto the nostrils of the Most High.
Absolutely.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Jim, you have a wonderful evening.
And you have a good broadcast.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You know, that's one of the things that this article in Vanity Fair, Vanity Fair magazine, has an article dealing with how the media treated Al Gore in the 2000 election cycle. And it is it's required reading for those of us who like to take a look at how the media helped to sway that election to the point that it could get close enough that George Bush could lose and still be president. And there's a quote in that article from Margaret Carlson, where she said, you know, if as journalists we had taken George Bush's positions and waded into the weeds and dug around on them a little bit, we could have uncovered the fact that they were a bunch of phony baloney. But it was so much more fun to pick on Al Gore. And now that's not a direct quote, but it's a pretty close paraphrase. Vanity Fair magazine, the article is available online. Bart Kopp linked to it yesterday. You can go read it for yourself, and you can find that quote from Margaret Carlson. And it should be enough to make you throw rocks at the wall. And there's some discussion about the way Maureen Dowd handled the campaign. And there's some discussion of the fact that, you know, George Bush was flying on his campaign airplane, bowling with oranges in the aisle of the aircraft in the sky and pretending to serve in-flight drinks to the reporters. While meanwhile, Vice President Gore, who had about 25 years worth of real public service experience, wasn't folksy enough for the media. He wasn't rolling oranges down the aisle of Air Force Two, or whatever his campaign aircraft was. And he wasn't playing, you know, aw, shucks, crap kicker, you know, hillbilly idiot. And he was punished for that with stuff that was just made up about him out of whole cloth. Just pure, unmitigated BS, lies. And extrapolating from what Jim said, the presidency of the United States is not an election of a chief priest. It is not an election of a god. We have not yet deified the presidency, unless you count the way that Republicans get all hot and bothered about Ronald Reagan and think that he was the second coming of Almighty God. But lo and behold, this form over substance approach to the presidency was brought to the front, what, last night? On the one hand, you had a Republican debate of the 9 or 10 little idiots or whatever it is, in Durham, New Hampshire. And at the same time, you've got Fred Thompson going on Jay Leno to announce his candidacy for president. Fred Thompson, a guy who has about as much substance as a jellyfish. And by the way, just to let you know, You know, I love that little region where I was born and where I grew up, the Shoals area of Alabama. A little girl who had scarlet fever as a child that blinded her and made her deaf rose above all of that and went on to be one of the most profound minds of the 20th century, Helen Keller. A young black man brought in a guitar to his preacher father's home one day, and the preacher threw it out and smashed it and said, "You're not going to have that devil instrument in my house." So he went on to master the piano and the trumpet, and along the way changed forever the way that you and everyone else from the first third of the century forward would hear music, because he invented the blues. And his name was William Christopher Handy. Pulitzer Prize winning author arose in the same area. Was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for a book called The Store, I believe. Arose in that area. On and on and on, a list of Dred Scott, for whom the Dred Scott decision is named, at one point was a porter in a hotel in Florence, Alabama. George Goober Lindsay helped to change the way that people viewed country folk, and he is a graduate of the college there. Talking about changing the way you hear music, a little business called Florence, Alabama Music Enterprises got started, Fame Studios. And you've heard the work of them and of Muscle Shoals Sound in the work of everyone from Bob Seger to the Stones to Bob Dylan to Paul Anka. And most of the great soul sound of the mid to late 60s was born in one of two places, either with Berry Gordy in Detroit or in the Muscle Shoals music experience. Lots of talent has come up out of that region and gone away or stayed there and changed the face of things. And almost all of it is for the good. But there is yin for every yang, up for every down, and bad for every good. And much to my horror and surprise, and I didn't realize this, Fred Thompson, you know that Tennessee's Fred Thompson, that down-home guy, the guy who talks like somebody you can trust. Fred Thompson's no more a Tennessean than I am. Fred Thompson was born in Sheffield, Colbert County, Alabama. Before going to Memphis State University, he was actually a student at what was then Florence State College. It is now the University of North Alabama. We lovingly refer to it as TUNA. And I know it may seem kind of strange, kind of odd for me, but I had a sinking feeling in the pit of my gut when I saw that, yes, Fred Thompson, that Fred Thompson, is a son of the Shoals. Ugh. Just ugh. And by the way, I saw something over at CNN. Right as I was coming on the air. Terror mastermind Osama bin Laden plans a new video addressing the American people regarding the anniversary of the September 11th attacks, terror monitoring groups said Thursday. At this point, you have to wonder if Osama has an agent. What do we get next? The outtakes? Is this the part where Osama says, "Actually, if the truth be told, I want to direct"? And speaking of Osama, probably the single greatest humiliation around the entire globe for the last 24 hours or so happened in Australia. I think you've probably, if you are a listener to John Fox's Foxed Up program, he's on vacation right now. He'll be back Monday. But if you've heard him talk about some of the Australian comedy programs, one of which is a show called Chasers. And they do send-ups, and they do they skewer public officiousness by making fools out of people. And they did it in spades this time. For the Asian Pacific Summit, the APEC Summit down there in Sydney right now, that has the entire city of Sydney gridlocked and has cost the Australian taxpayers something on the order of $300 million Australian dollars because of the fact that George Bush is scared of his own damned shadow. Well, the Chasers people rented a limo and a couple of great big honking SUVs, all black, put some officious-looking stickers in the window, and put a Canadian flag on the front of it, got a couple of guys in dark suits to run along their motorcade at the same time, motorcycles, the works, drove through two different checkpoints at the APEC summit, and security waved them on through, got all the way to George Bush's hotel, the Intercontinental, at which point a man wearing a very obviously dummied up Osama bin Laden beard and dressed in white robes got out of the car. At which point the Australian security went, "Crikeys, he's here!" And took down the took down the crew from Chasers. You just can't buy comedy like that. And then the Australian officials got on the air and said, "Well, the fact of the matter is, it would appear that this is a glaring example of how good the security is. After all, we caught him before he got to the president." Caught who, you goon? A comic? Well, after all, we all have heard George Bush. That, you know, there's not very many things that scare me, but I am scared of clowns. Those big floppy shoes and those red bulbous noses, they give me the nightmares. Oh, God. Let's go to the phone. Susan's calling from Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
I'm sorry, I hadn't heard that until just now.
Oh, you didn't know about that.
Oh, I've been slaving over Sen Cab all morning. Oh, that is so funny. Oh, I get
Canadian flag, Susan. Canada wasn't even invited to the summit.
I'd give my left arm to see film of that. I really would. I really hope they had somebody nearby with a hidden camera.
Oh, there were cameras involved.
Oh, God, that's classic. That is classic.
And they said, you know, why Canada? Well, no, we didn't figure anybody would be suspicious of the Canadians.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. No, well, you know, I thought you were going to talk about the collective mooning.
No, I didn't get to that one. I kind of got stopped in my tracks with the Canadian convoy. But the beautiful part, I saw the report on CNN, Susan. The beautiful part is when the guy opens his own car door and gets out, and he's standing there with the white robes with the phony Osama beard on.
Oh, God, that's hysterical.
He got through two checkpoints looking like that.
I bet you the Secret Service is having kittens right about now.
I hear Donald. I'm making Donald laugh is one of the high points of my evenings.
Anyway, that wasn't the reason I called in.
No.
The reason I called in was first subject, you know, about the dear Reverend.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of an incidental comment. It was, these sleepers, you know, when the Catholic the Catholic Church.
Still struggling, I understand. It's okay.
The Catholic Church insists on, the creepers insist on going after the Catholics.
Right.
About their little peccadillo, well, lots of peccadillos. And let's face it, it's justified. But they cannot ever, ever, ever do that again.
Well, they shouldn't ever do it, because for every Catholic priest that's diddled a little boy, there's a Baptist minister or a Church of God brother, or you know, an apostolic pastor who's done just as much.
That's what I wanted to bring up, is because my God, the thing with Craig was, as gross as it was, you know, let's face it, bathroom, dick, it's between two consenting adults.
In a restroom.
Right. But it's still two adults.
This is not that.
You're not talking about that. You're talking about pedophilia.
Yeah, you're not talking about sexuality.
You're talking about
rape.
Pedophilia.
You know, these pedophilic crimes are no more sex crimes than brutal, violent, what we tend to think of as ordinary rape is. They are crimes of evil, they are crimes of power, and they are not crimes of passion or sex.
Yeah.
The sex is a road or a means of achieving power.
Yeah, and it's just appalling. It's just appalling. Now, there's a way of kind of cleansing the palate, since you've declared this kind of a prayer meeting. Would you like to hear a little bit of a quote?
Sure.
Would you like to hear a Wiccan creation?
Okay, sure.
It's only a couple paragraphs.
Okay.
Alone, awesome, complete within herself, the goddess, she whose name cannot be spoken, floated in the abyss of the outer darkness before the beginning of all things. And as she looked into the curved mirror of black space, she saw by her own light radiant reflection, and with it she drew it forth by the power that was in her, and made love to herself, and called her Maria, the wonderful. Their ecstasy burst forth in the single song of all that is, was, or ever shall be, and with the song came motion, waves that poured outward and became all the spheres and the circles of the worlds. The goddess became filled with love, swollen with love, and she gave birth to a rain of bright spirits that filled the worlds and became all beings. There's more, but I'll stop there.
Okay. Gee, that's a lot less violent than talking snakes.
Well, let's face it. Wicca is a female religion because it is, creation is an act of birth. Any woman who is given birth knows that that child is a mini universe. And expecting a man, a male god, to create the universe. Give me a break. Sorry.
That's okay. No.
The reason I read that is because I figured, well, for one thing, it sounds nice, and for another thing, any freepers listening are probably having kissy fits right about now.
Most likely. Most likely. And I've got an interesting story to follow it up with, too. So,
cool.
It segues nicely. You know, in the radio business, we're all worried about the segues.
Well, that's great.
Susan, I'll talk to you later, all right, dear?
Okay. Love to Agnes.
Absolutely. Bye now.
Night-night.
We go to Alan Hey, Alan, welcome to the program. Oh, lost Alan. Yeah, going through tunnels or in and out of coverage. Alan's about the high-techest listener we've got. Listens literally on his computer via a wireless card or via his cell phone. Some sort of Insta magic that I don't understand. Susan brought up the Wiccan creation myth. And it reminded me of this particular story that I was looking at. It comes from Newton Square, Pennsylvania, where the Fundies are all in a dither. Because in kindergarten, okay, we're talking about kindergarten here. They had a segment called All About Me, because it's kindergarten. And you're learning to live with your fellow students and, you know, not to steal the Play-Doh and, you know, basically the civilizing process for little children. And, God, Wesley Bush is a kindergarten student at Culbertson Elementary School there in Newton Square, Pennsylvania. And as part of All About Me, they were to have their mommies come and read them their favorite book. You know, I don't know, maybe little Susie wanted to have My Little Pony. If it had been, you know, if it had been Little Bitty Bob, I'm sure I would have had my mom there reading Go Dog Go. The great line, goodbye, I do not like your hat, being one that still resonates throughout our family. Or maybe Put Me in the Zoo, P.D. Eastman. Or Green Eggs and Ham. Or One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish. Well, you want to know how messed up little Wesley Bush is going to grow up to be? They asked him his favorite book, and he said, the Bible. Oh, dear. So they had the mommy in, and for the All About Me unit, and they said he said, I want mommy to read me the Bible. Now, you know what? I have no small amount of experience now, after my 44 years upon the planet, with A, being, and B, raising 5-year-olds. If you ask a 5-year-old to bring you their favorite book, you will get Put Me in the Zoo. You will get Go Dog Go. You'll get Sam and the Firefly. You'll get any number of things. What you won't get is the Bible. What's your favorite book, little Wesley? It's the Bible, especially the part where Lot's daughters get him drunk in the cave and get it on with him. There's a reason you don't read the Bible to 5-year-olds. There's a lot of really gross, hinky, kinky, dirty, violent, bloody stuff in there. You know, I don't know, maybe little Wesley Bush is like a little Mel Gibson or something. Read me the crucifixion part, Mommy, especially the part with the nails. And so now Wesley Bush's mommy is having a conniption. The school district is being dragged into court because they wouldn't let little 5-year-old Wesley Bush have his rights to have his mommy read him the Bible, the part about Noah. The sex part, you know. I made that up. Jeremy Tedesco is legal counsel with the Alliance Defense Fund. And he said, when Wesley told his mom, I want you to read the Bible, that's my favorite book, the school said no, even though they let every other book read and go forward. And even though they told Mrs. Bush, no, you can't read the Bible, they said, but here, read this book on witches and Halloween instead. The federal court, obviously the fine folks at the American Family Association aren't telling the whole truth because the federal court sided with the school district. That didn't sit well with Jeremy Tedesco. The lower court's decision said that it was okay to restrict the Bible, but the bottom line is that Christian students and their parents aren't second-class citizens at school and shouldn't be discriminated against based on their religious speech that they want to engage in when they're invited to engage in private expression. What? Private expression? This was a public expression. But I love the fact that they use phrases like second-class citizens when these are the very freaks who are engaged in trying to enshrine in law second-class citizenship for about 10% of this country based on something that they don't even know what goes on when the lights go out. But they're second-class citizens if little Wesley can, you know mommy put him up to this. Now, Wesley, honey, they're going to ask you what your favorite book is. What's your favorite book, Wesley?
Sam and the Firefly.
What's your favorite book, Wesley?
Green Eggs and Ham.
Wesley, Jesus doesn't like it when you lie. What's your favorite book, Wesley, or Mommy Spank?
It's the Bible. Read me the Bible, Mama. Read me the Bible.
God. Let's talk to Alan. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I'm over here in Delaware.
Oh, yeah?
Nice place.
Nice place.
Yeah. Hey, I was thinking that the most important issue for Democrats is their primary and trying to keep the voting machines out of their primary and trying to keep the election and primary honest.
Mm-hmm.
I never hear that issue coming up.
Well, there's been some development on it. Some states are moving away from the so-called DREs, you know, the touchscreen machines. I know our good friend Brad Friedman over at bradblog.com is probably the single best resource on all these voting issues. So if you want to follow it and keep up with it, bradblog.com is a great place to go, Alan. As well, and frankly, to be honest, I don't talk about them a whole lot because it gets into technical, computer-oriented issues that, frankly, I'm not competent to discuss. I just know the things are bad for any sort of honest and open the voting, and that's good enough for me. But yeah, there have been significant developments lately, and you can catch up on them over at bradblog.com.
Yeah, I feel like it's if the primary's open and honest, I feel like this is going to keep. It's going to get somebody good in there, like Dennis Kucinich or John Edwards.
You know, I would hope so, but you know, and see, that's the thing. You know, going back to the 2004 and even the 06, we don't talk about that a lot. The 06 election could have actually been considerably more of a whipping for the Republicans than it actually was. Because when you've got these machines, it's different than having pencils and paper, because that way you can choke off the flow of various and sundry voting precincts that you don't want people to have full and free access to the ballot in. You know, say primarily African American districts, things like that.
Yeah, they don't want it to be honest. That's for sure.
No, they don't want it honest, and they don't want it open. You know, you got to remember it was conservatives who were Democrats at the time, later became Republicans after the Civil Rights Act. These were the people who enforced literacy tests in the Deep South where they would ask an African-American voter to read from a Chinese restaurant menu, you know, in Chinese, as proof of their literacy, or would have them sign their name to prove that they could write, have them sign their name with a ballpoint pen on a piece of wax paper. Obviously, you can't do that. The ink won't stick.
Yeah, I'm thinking if in the last election, if that Dr. Howard Dean,
mm-hmm.
he would have tore George Bush up.
Well, I think he probably would have, and that's why they didn't want anything to do with him. That's why Dean was destroyed before the election cycle could get fully underway.
Yeah. Hey, you were talking about Hitler earlier. Wasn't he married to his... Didn't he marry his cousin at one time?
No, he didn't marry her, but it was a very close relationship, and it was his first cousin, and she committed suicide or died under mysterious circumstances, I think. Yeah,
I think maybe he killed her.
That has been put forward, but it was never the evidence was never allowed to be developed.
Yeah, kind of like the Republicans these days.
Yeah.
The evidence out there, hide everything.
Right, dummy up the process and make sure that the truth can't be found.
Yeah, I listened to a book about that on. I listen to a lot of books on MP3 file when I'm going down the road. Not as much as I used to. I'm about to listen to a book called War and Peace. Are you familiar with that book?
You mean Tolstoy's?
Yeah.
I read it way back in college, in translation. I hear it's much better in the Russian.
Oh, I think this is going to be a good book for me to go through.
Yeah, you'll be a while.
Yeah, 5 hours.
I mean, yeah. If you've got the time, I'd go from that to Moby Dick. That should take up about the next month or two.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking my call.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Alan. You drive safely, okay? And okay, by the way, the paintings arrived, and we are preparing to do the giveaway.
Oh, great!
And they are just beautiful, Alan. They are just beautiful.
Oh, thanks. I've been working on one today.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So you
a lot better.
You're able to, like, when you do your pullover or whatever, you're able to paint while you're on the road?
Yeah, sometimes I put out up to the side 2 or 3 hours in a day. I just make myself do that because I feel like I do something I really like in this world. I feel a lot better than just working to make a living. I feel like an animal or something when you do that.
Get off the treadmill for a little bit, right?
Yeah. Do something that really you feels like it's meaningful in your life.
That's an awesome approach, Alan. That is truly an admirable approach.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of Joseph Campbell to get ideas like that.
Oh, the power of myth and yeah.
He was my inspiration. It's back when I left the Christian church and I was like going around like on my horse without holding onto the reins. And then I ran across Joseph Campbell, and that really helped my life.
It gives you that sense of perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there that I could read, get a lot of inspiration from.
Oh, I tell you what, there's a ton of it out there. I'm reading. I'm a little slow on the uptake and in getting around to it, but I'm reading Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel right now, and it's just an eye-opening experience in terms of trying to understand what it is to be a human in so-called civilized society.
Yeah. What's it called now?
Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Uh-huh.
And, it's been out for 5 or 6 years, I guess, but it is a brilliant piece of writing.
I remember going through James Joyce's book, Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was an excellent one. I tried to read it to go, and I just couldn't find the time. But then I went through the MP3 file when I was driving down the road, and, oh, man, it's just like a book with deep meaning. It really helped me out to go through that one.
Well, James Joyce is no easy read, Alan.
I know it.
I remember trying to do Ulysses, and just, you know, it sort of made my eyeballs swim.
Yeah. It sounded like he went through the type of things that a lot of people go through. He went through his religious stage, James Joyce, and then he realized it's just life.
Yeah.
Get away from all that cookie religion stuff. Just live.
Precisely. Yeah. Free your head. Exactly. Alan, so good to talk to you, and stay safe on the road, will you?
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Bye now. All right, then, to the news we go. Your thoughts are more than welcome. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, or on your own nickel if you want to save us a couple of bucks, 304-658-5453. Either one rings right here to the studio. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Never believed in things that I couldn't see. I said if I can't feel it, then how could it be? No magic could happen to me. I saw you, I couldn't believe it. You took my heart, I couldn't retrieve it. Said to myself, what's it all about? Now I know there can be no doubt. You're my
This is the Quality News Network. A federal judge struck down a portion of the U.S. Patriot Act, ruling it is unconstitutional. The section of the anti-terror law that permits the FBI to send Internet service providers secret demands for customer information was found to violate the First Amendment. The ACLU brought the suit at a time when the Bush administration is seeking to expand its surveillance powers. The Justice Department warned the FCC that it should not impose regulations barring broadband Internet companies from charging extra fees for priority web traffic. The Justice Department says not allowing fees could deter innovation and upgrading and limit consumer choice. German authorities are searching for more suspects who may be connected to a possible foiled terrorist attack. German and American targets were part of the plot. 11 New Jersey officials have been arrested in an FBI corruption probe, including a mayor and state lawmakers. The arrests were connected to insurance contracts for local governments. A report that says the U.S. should let Iraqi troops take over more control of their country's security has sparked debate in Congress on how to avoid sending that country into chaos. The same report says it will be at least 18 months before Iraq's security forces can assume control. An Internet agency that monitors Islamic websites reports that Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden will release a new video addressing the American people about the 9/11 anniversary. Intel Center says a statement is expected in the next 72 hours. U.S. and Iraqi forces have launched a massive operation targeting Al-Qaeda in northern Iraq. At least 26,000 troops are involved. Eight Russian bombers got very near Norway's airspace, so much so that Norwegian fighter jets scrambled, as did four British fighters. Norway says it's the third time since mid-July the same scenario has played out. Syria and Israel clashed today. Syrian officials say an Israeli aircraft dropped munitions in their country, so they opened fire. Experts say tensions have been building between the longtime foes all summer. In Nicaragua, the death toll from Hurricane Felix has risen to 65. Officials report discovering 25 dead fishermen along the Mosquito Coast. And the world is paying tribute today to operatic tenor Luciano Pavarotti, who died this morning in Italy. This is QNN.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The CDC reports the suicide rate for girls ages 10 to 14 has gone up 76% to the highest level in more than a decade. Researchers say they pinpointed a virus that's tied to colony collapse disorder, a condition that's affected 50 to 90% of U.S. commercial bee colonies. The virus shows up only in hives that have suffered the disorder. Whether it is a cause or just a marker isn't yet clear. A new study says black women are almost twice as likely to die of breast cancer than white women. It also points to a biological cause that For that high death rate, black women's tumors apparently fail to respond to commonly given hormone treatments. In Washington, D.C., tens of thousands of Chinese-made condoms distributed in an anti-AIDS campaign have been rejected. Their packaging was defective. The Mortgage Bankers Association reports that this spring, the number of homeowners who received foreclosure notices was up to a record high. Apple CEO Steve Jobs apologizes for dropping the price of the popular iPhone 2 months after it came out. Jobs sent a letter to customers who already bought the iPhones, offering them $100 store credit. Light sweet crude is trading at $76.30 a barrel. Gold is at $704.60 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow finished up 58 points at 13,363. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Fourteen past the hour, we begin the second hour. Maybe I will, maybe I won't get the third top of the hour news on time. You know, we're not beslaved or beholden to anybody's satellite time clock. Because, you know, we don't have to worry about clicking over anybody's automation at some little AM station in Podunk that doesn't have anybody actually working there because the computers do it all now. Oh, that's just snarky, isn't it? Let's not waste any time. Go straight to the phones. David's calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome aboard.
Good evening, Mr. Bob.
Well, good evening, Mr. David. How are you this evening, sir?
Yeah, I have no idea why I did that.
I don't know, Mr. Bones.
My brain is so effing fried today. I was into an antique dealer because I'm getting into the antique business hardcore. So.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, and one of the things I can tell people is one of the great tips he told me is how to find outstanding bottles and how to find crappy bottles.
Ah.
And one of the things he told me was one of the ways you can tell is if you look on the side of the bottle, and usually you're looking for cures, bitters, or remedies. Those are the ones that are really going to go through the roof for you. But he told me, he said, when the seam disappears on the side of the bottle, when you see it, now you see it, now you don't, that's a 100-year bottle in your hand, and you want to buy it if it's a good deal. So there you go.
Oh, wow, cool.
So anyone who is listening, that's how you find a 100-year, an outstanding bottle.
I can't tell you
how you find an amazing bottle, but I can tell you how you find an outstanding.
Pretty good, then. Patent medicine snake oil bottles or what have value?
Isn't it funny that the cures, bitters, and remedies of all the stuff that we really do need that wasn't in those bottles people are looking for? There's just some kind of hidden humor in that. And they're empty, too!
You know, that's the thing I hate most about a bottle that's empty, is that it's empty.
Yeah.
Because what's the old line? I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy?
I haven't heard that one, but that's good.
Man, you're young.
Yeah, I guess so. So what have you been discussing this evening?
Just a little of this, a little of that. It's kind of like the second Boston album, the Osama's Greatest Hits tape that's coming out. What kind of PR machine do these people have that they're able to tell us that, you know, Osama's new videotape will be at I guess on iTunes or something in a couple of days. I don't know.
You know what I was thinking of, when that CNN headline came up where they said they stopped the plot for a new terror cell attack. I bet you there was someone in the White House going, "Damn it!"
Exactly. Curses foiled again.
Yeah, but today I want to share something that I pulled off Slate, and it's miraculously a good article.
Okay.
It's about Iran, and it's a perspective from an Iranian about what is going on there. It's like a slice of life, and I think it's important. And just share that with you now, I guess.
Okay, go ahead.
My cousin Kamran is a successful. It's also kind of a heartbreaker too. My cousin Kamran is a successful software engineer in Tehran with a house, a thriving business of his own, and a brand new Peugeot, which he likes to show off by careening through the city's clogged streets at maniacal speeds.
Okay, I got to stop you there. Peugeot's careen? I've never seen a Peugeot except in its natural state, i.e. sitting still.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Like most of Iran's young and highly educated population, he must rely on other means to make ends meet. So in addition to running his software business, Kamran tutors neighborhood children, raises chickens on his aunt's farm, hires himself as a guide and translator for tourists, dabbles in real estate, and occasionally sells imitation designer handbags out of the trunk of his car.
I have for you a very nice Louis Vuitton bag. Very nice bag. Yeah.
That's insane. I could never do that, but that's another thing. Anyways. What kind of life is this, he confides in me. I have a master's degree. I fought in the Iran-Iraq war. I have my own business. But here I am forced to sell purses out of my car to feed my family? He laughs to hide his shame. I tell you, when Bush comes, things will be different. When Bush comes, it is a popular joke in Tehran, akin to saying when pigs fly. Of course, behind every joke lurks a genuine sentiment. Sure, Kamran laughs when he says it, but then he grips the wheel for a brief moment, glances up at the sky as though expecting an American fighter jet to zoom overhead. I can't blame him. There is a palpable sense among many Iranians that the United States might start dropping bombs on them at any moment. After all, Iran is literally surrounded by American troops. The U.S. maintains military bases in Oman, Qatar, Kuwait, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. A fleet of heavily armed American warships is conducting military exercises in the Persian Gulf. The CIA just received a presidential directive to launch black ops meant to destabilize the Iranian government. The Bush administration might well be believed to be considered launching its own nuclear weapons, so-called bunker busters like the B-61-11 against Iran's suspected nuclear sites. And Congress has approved another $75 million to promote democracy in Iran's unapologetically regime change. All of this makes Kamran chuckle. Regime change! Regime change, he mocks an American accent. It's not that he doesn't want an end to the clerical regime. He'd love nothing more than to drag the mullahs out of the hall of government, but he has stopped caring, like the rest of his friends. Kamran has grown so disenchanted with Iran's political system and so suspicious of American intentions in the wake of the Iraq war that he has simply given up. He doesn't vote in Iranian elections anymore. He barely reads the newspapers. He stopped watching CNN International and the BBC. He has more immediate concerns, like how to pay his mortgage, how to afford skyrocketing gas prices, what to do about the impoverished Iraqis flooding into the country, and most of all, how to use his immense expertise to make a decent living. The only time he pays any attention to the news is when the Iranian press announces yet another impending threat from America. Those stories are popping up a lot lately. In the past couple of weeks, President Bush has raised the rhetorical stakes again, first by threatening to label Iran's military intelligence branch, the Revolutionary Guard, a terrorist organization, essentially a declaration of war in the age of the war on terror. Then, by announcing in a fiery speech before the American Legion that he is authorizing U.S. forces in Iraq to confront Tehran's murderous activities. Both moves come after months of accusations that Iran is arming and training Shiite militias who are killing both American soldiers and Iraqi civilians. The accusations of Iran's meddling in Iraq are no doubt true, but consider this. According to a report released by the New York Times of the 60 to 80 fighters who enter Iraq each month to join al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, half are from Saudi Arabia. The majority of suicide bombers...
Say that again. Drive that one home, would you? Would you, David?
According to a report released by the New York Times of the 60 to 80 fighters who enter Iraq each month to join al-Qaeda, half are from Saudi Arabia. The majority of suicide bombers are Saudis, as are about 45% of all foreign militants targeting U.S. troops and Iraqi civilians. And nearly half of the foreign prisoners in U.S. custody in Iraq are from Saudi Arabia. Yet, far from threatening to confront Saudi Arabia's murderous activities, Bush has just offered to supply billions of dollars in advanced weaponry to that country. Why? According to State and Defense Department officials, to help ward off Iranian influence. No wonder Kamran is so paranoid about an impending U.S. invasion. He's not alone. For all its blustering confidence, the Iranian government is convinced it is next for the Axis of Evil. And Iran has learned the obvious lesson from its fellow Axis members. The country without nuclear weapons, Iraq, was attacked and occupied by U.S. forces. The country with nuclear weapons, North Korea, is being plied with hundreds of millions of dollars to give them up. It's not hard to figure out why Iran is so frantic to develop nuclear capabilities. In fact, almost everything the Iranian regime does, from accelerating its nuclear program to arming Shiite militias in Iraq to crushing opposition movements at home, must be viewed from the prism of the overpowering fear of a coming military attack. Perhaps no more indicative of the regime's paranoia than its detainment of four Iranian Americans, including Haleh Asfandari of the Woodrow Wilson Center on International Policy, on charges of spying for the United States. Asfandari, who is specifically accused of trying to start a velvet revolution in Iran, was finally released on bail last week. The charges are absurd, of course, but the Iranian government's actions cannot be isolated from the announcement made by the CIA in May that the United States is actively recruiting Iranian Americans who, in the words of one intelligence officer, have links with their families at home and who could be a good two-way source of information. Kamran shakes his head. When do you tell him that? When I tell him this, how did you think the mullahs were going to react to that? He asks. It's true that he has made a concerted effort to temper his administration's saber-rattling with the direct appeals to the Iranian people. My message to the Iranian people is you can do better than this current government. Bush said last week, you don't have to be isolated. You don't have to be in a position where you can't realize your full economic potential. Yo, isn't that looking through the looking glass kind of thing right there?
A little bit.
What he just said. And he doesn't even realize it. But such statements enrage Kamran and the rest of Tehran's young and struggling middle class even more than the threats of military attack. It's not so much the fact that not a penny of the $75 million for democracy has been accepted by any organization inside Iran. It is that Bush's comments only exasperate the paranoia of the Iranian government, resulting in further suppression of dissent, national isolation, and less opportunity for Iranians like Kamran to achieve their full economic potential. That explains why Iran's most prominent advocates of democracy have repeatedly asked the president to stop reaching out to them. Nobel Prize winner Shirin Ebadi, who is also Esfandari's lawyer, has argued that Washington's policy of helping the cause of democracy in Iran has made it more difficult for the more moderate factions within Iran's power hierarchy to argue for an accommodation with the West. And he closes with this. On my last visit to Tehran, I asked Kamran what the United States could do to foster democratic reform in Iran. Just leave us alone, he said.
And, yeah, there's the $64 question. You know, and that's that. You know, it's, whether it's regime change, David, or, you know, by virtue of some stupid congressional resolution, or by virtue of lobbying by AIPAC or what the hell ever, none of these goobers seem able to comprehend the fact that democracy must be an organic outgrowth of a desire by an indigenous people. You cannot impose democracy at the muzzle of a gun.
And you know, another thing that I noticed, Bob, is this not leaving people alone and constantly berating others. It is such an addiction, a disease, that is not healthy for either person. It just eats away at your brain, because you're always going to find someone else. You're like, well, those people are causing us trouble. Yeah, they're causing us trouble. We got to do this and we got to do that, and that's why we have to do this. And it's never ending.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm glad that there, you know, whether it's Slate or whomever, I'm glad there's somebody out there putting out articles that talk about everyday life in Iran, because if you were to rely on the mainstream media, you would think that Iran was comprised of millions of uniformed, murderous, insane, religiously whacked out of their mind, you know, people in black robes doing it, you know, all the time, and hollering Allah Akbar and just festering at the border waiting to go pouring over.
They have nothing else to make their money, Bob. That's what's in their warehouse for talking points right now. They have to sell those talking points. They can't just have them sitting on the shelf. Oh, by the way, there was one more line that said in the article that I missed.
Okay.
And he says, after he said, just leave us alone, he said, warily, then after a beat, and please, no bombs.
And please, no bombs. Well, you know, sorry, dude, you're getting bombs.
You know, I almost cringe to read the comments on here. I don't even want to, because I know what people, they're going to assess, they're going to analyze, and they're going to act. Bob, I'm so sick of people acting like they're experts on Iran.
Well, I'm not, and I don't put myself out as an expert on Iran, but
no,
I do.
No, I mean the people who tell us we have to attack, and then they explain. I don't put myself. You know.
You know what I'm an expert on, David?
Yeah.
I'm an expert on ordinary.
Yeah.
I'm an expert on got to get up, go to work, get the job done, come home, do something about dinner, and maybe at the end of it all, get to relax for an hour before I hit the rack and get up the next morning and do it again. Amen. I'm an expert on ordinary. And you know what? We don't have a lock on ordinary, David. There's lots and lots of ordinary in Iran.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's 50-60% of the population's under 25 years old. How much longer, if we'll just leave them the hell alone, how much longer are they going to put up with a bunch of old fuddy-duddies with beards down to their navels? You know, it's like being ruled by ZZ Top, for Christ's sakes. How long are they going to put up with those guys? Oh, you may not look at your wristwatch on the... shut up! You know, and run them out and put in a government that they want. But it will not happen if we start raining death and destruction from above.
I understand that. And what I meant by experts, I didn't mean from your side. I meant these people.
No, I know what you meant. It's fairly rare that we bring on a lot of interviews on this program. Because A, there's a lot of effort that goes into it that frankly I don't have time to do right now because we're busy running a network.
Yeah.
But two, I'm suspicious of experts. I'm suspicious of some. Does that make any sense? I mean,
it does make sense. And you know, the fact of the matter is, every single message board I've seen, they're always answering the topic of Iran. And these are people that I have respect for or I talk to. And it comes back to this, Bob. They actually think they know the country. They actually think they understand the people. They actually think they understand. They think it's one culture is what they think it is.
Yeah, a monoculture,
sure. They're
not
dealing with one culture. It's a damn country, people.
Yeah, and it's a country that's got people who milk cows for a living, and it's got people who raise wheat for a living, and it's got people who, you know, work on cars for a living, and people who build houses, and people who do all kinds of ordinary stuff.
You're going to have people on there who like Britney Spears, who like America.
Okay, now see, you're arguing for bombing them again.
No. And then you're going to have people who don't like America. Who just hate it because it's being forced down their throats. But like anything, if Iran was being forced down our throats, Bob, and we were from the outside instead of looking in, we would do the same thing. We would be like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, there's not a lot of difference between a working stiff in Iran and a working stiff in the United States. Maybe it's a matter of blue jeans and television sets, but at the end of the day, they're still worried about the same thing I'm still worried about. You know, taking care of the kids tomorrow. Are the kids okay? Do they have enough food to eat? Do they have clothes on their backs? Will I be able to send them to college? You know, there's a guy with a master's degree who's doing all those things that you described, and how do you not go to sleep? Just one big knot of worry, and for the extra bonus fun of it, you got to worry if you're going to be on the planet the next morning, or is the United States Air Force and the United States Navy and the United States this, that, and the other thing going to blow the living snot out of them sometime between midnight and sunrise?
I find, akin, that the United States, to me, over the years, people have wandered in a laboratory, and they saw the laboratory. That's the United States, right? Now, in the present day, the lights are on, and they see inside. They see inside the cage is a diseased, fat rat, and that's America. And they finally see it for what it is, all across every single country. And now, people, meanwhile, the talking points and the pundits are like, oh no. That's not disease. He's just having a tough time. He's having a hard time. He's going to get better. And I know how he's going to get better. I have these pills. He's going to be okay.
And now we're going to have Osama's greatest hits. What do you want to bet Osama's greatest hits, when they come out, have a line about putting a sharp stick in George Bush about Iran? You would not attack Iran because the great nation of Iran will repel you, and yada yada yada. Osama hates Iran, okay? Iran hates Osama. But, you know, Bin Laden wants more ramping up of the war. That is, that's Bin Laden's goal, if you believe the whole Bin Laden thing, okay? And whether it's Osama Bin Laden or the people who are, you know, there's a pro-war faction in the Middle East, just like there's a pro-war faction in the United States, and they are locked in this tango of death, if you will.
Right.
And neither one of them wants to stop the dance because it's mighty good for business.
Exactly.
You know, Ahmadinejad comes out and says something stupid and crazy, and the price of oil goes up. Then George Bush comes out and says something stupid and crazy, and the price of oil, crude at the wellhead, goes up again. It's good for business.
And when it comes to important questions, which is still just, you know, I hope Greg Pallas can come up with the answer, but who authorized those 6 bombs on that B-52 bomber? I really want to know. Who signed it? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, I know.
And again, if we're not going to have the answer, then I can't. There's no reason for discussing it.
Well, you know, and I got to thinking about this last night after the show, because it's one question after another with this bomber story. The warheads were supposed to be left in Minot, North Dakota, but instead these fully loaded cruise missiles were tacked onto a B-52, and the B-52 was sent zooming off from North Dakota to fly to Barksdale Air Force Base. I'm not clear. Did the bombs wind up in Louisiana, or did they come back to Minot, North Dakota, or did they land in, Georgia? The story was very incomplete, you know, just enough to get the American people to kind of go, you know,
the other story that's interesting that I found interesting was, did you know they arrested those kids for mooning Karl Rove?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. First degree mooning with intent. I mean, you can't be mooning Karl Rove. There's a law against that, ain't there?
And the things this guy did for pranks and hijinks in his own party, and we're arresting someone for mooning? Jesus, God.
I know. And, you know, I'm sick of the Larry Craig story. And, frankly, you know how I am. I don't care what somebody's sexuality is.
Right.
You know, I was listening to Mark Levine's show beforehand, and, there's an element of this that says these people do this bathroom sex because it's a thrill. It's an adrenaline rush. It's what some people get by getting on a roller coaster. I can't equate the two, but I guess somehow, the human brain's capable of anything, and you can do that.
I don't know, Bob, but I know you don't have that much time, but before I go, I just wanted to say, I wanted to recommend something funny, and just a quote from a scene I saw.
Okay.
There's this movie called Art School Confidential, and it was about this kid who goes to art school, the hard lessons of the art world. It's a really good movie, by the way, and people should see it. Anyways, there's a scene in it where one of the guys just draws this awful sports car, and he puts it up there. And the art students are looking around, and they go, wow! It's like, this is so... All the art students, they were all taken by it. They're like, wow, this is so original. It's like you have no influences whatsoever. And then you can see the other art student really getting pissed off because his design is so much freaking better. It's like a great portrait. It's a great sketch, everything. The lines is perfect. So then he goes, okay, I'll show you. So he goes back the next day, and he draws something similar to what that kid did. And this is what they say verbatim. They go, the teacher goes, no, he goes, Jerome is trying something new. And then he asks, what do you students think? And the teacher's played by John Malkovich. So the students are like, I don't know. Jerome seems to me like he wants to go outside the box, but he's still in the box. And it's just like a picture of a crappy door or a window. And then he goes, but the other picture, and then they show the guy he's drawing a tank this time, this crappy tank. He's like, now he's outside the box.
Jesus.
In essence, Bob, that's what I feel like we're dealing with. We have to draw that crappy picture of that crappy Porsche. To get attention now, because that's how much people have been screwed with in their minds.
Yeah.
And to me, that just summarized everything. Keep, just draw the crappy picture of the Porsche and grit your teeth while you do it.
Whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah, I'll send you to it so you can watch it this weekend. It's a really good.
Okay, cool.
It's a really funny film. I think you'll laugh a lot of times in it.
I've read about it. I haven't seen it yet. So yeah
it's for those people who want to see it. It's called Art School Confidential. I recommend it.
All right, cool, David. Thank you very kindly.
All right, Bob.
Have a good night.
Later.
Later. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. 21 and a half minutes. No, 20 and a half minutes. I can't read. I can't do math anymore. I'm special. 20 and a half minutes before the hour. Agnes says we're going to take a break. And, you know, whatever you want to bring to the table tonight is fine. 877-443-2366 or 304-658-5453. This is America's Liberal Voice. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, and I'm Bob.
Holy Jesus, holy cow, the steam is rising. Didn't you think, didn't you hope, you know the sun is still shining. Take a picture of this holy world, put it on your Bible cover. Hold on tightly to your Holy Ghost. Hold on tighter to your lover. Yeah. We've got babies running around with no shoes, but with guns in their hands. We've got money dropping in dirty bombs the Holy Land.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music. Billy Shears.
Join us this Saturday at 9 p.m. to midnight for Night Sounds. We'll feature some brand new music, and this week's special segments will include music of the 80s, one-hit wonders, and a new segment with some great smooth jazz selections. And of course, Erica Richards will be on hand for Night Sounds dedications. You can direct your dedication request to Erica Richards at BillyShearsMusic.com. Be there this Saturday night at 9 p.m. right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
She had sultry eyes. She made it perfectly plain that she was his for a price. But he said, leave me alone. I'm a family man, and my bark is much worse than my bite. He said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. If you push me too far, I just might.
Oh, 15 minutes and change before the hour. I'm Bob. Thursday evening edition of Head On, and I've got a story here that one of our news ninjas, Betsy, Texas news ninja Betsy, sent along to me regarding an article by a person named Taylor Marsh, and I guess she is a liberal talker of some stripe, out you know, just like us out there on the internets, and. It's an interesting issue because she points to some remarks made by Dennis Kucinich on a trip to Syria, in which Dennis Kucinich refused to go to Iraq because he said to enter Iraq would be to give sanction to the illegal occupation of Iraq, and he said, I won't do that. And how can you disagree with him? If you go there somehow or another, you are approving of it tacitly by your presence. But this Taylor Marsh person, who calls herself the antidote to right-wing talk, says, when Speaker Pelosi went to Syria, she made a statement with the visit which still infuriated the wingnuts, but she did it with class and purpose. Talking about Nancy Pelosi, who basically said the Constitution is off the table with regard to impeachment, and using the words class and purpose, I don't get it myself. Because I think when you say that you will not enforce a portion of the Constitution despite the fact that you have already sworn an oath to do so, class and purpose go out the window. But she says, I got to wonder who her candidate is because of the way this attack. The same, you know, she did it with class and purpose. The same cannot be said for Mr. Kucinich. Anything for publicity, right, Dennis? And she quotes an article. The article itself coming from the Jerusalem Post. In that discusses Dennis Kucinich's visit to Syria, I'll just read you what it says here, what she quoted. Kucinich, a strong anti-war opponent who trails far in the U.S. presidential polls, also said he won't visit Iraq on his trip to the region because he considers the U.S. military deployment there illegal. Quote, I feel the United States is engaging in an illegal occupation. I don't want to bless that occupation with my presence, he said in an interview in Lebanon after visiting Syria. I will not do it. Kucinich, who accused the Bush administration of policies that have destabilized the Mideast, you got a problem with that? Met with Syrian President Bashar Assad during his visit to Damascus. He said Assad was receptive to his ideas of strength through peace. And she links to the article in the Jerusalem Post. And then editorializes in her own right, Kucinich evidently forgot the rules. Evidently the congressman is following Bush's lead instead of Speaker Pelosi's. Huh? It has long been, and this is a quote, it has long been the custom that members of Congress do not go overseas and criticize the president, that partisanship ends at the water's edge. And for this, she quotes none other than Rahm Emanuel, and then editorializes at the bottom, on this one, Rahm is right. No, he's not. And this is an interesting topic. It's an interesting philosophical sort of thing. And I've even had this discussion in our long 3-hour blab fest that I have with Mark Levine. You know, we don't do this on the air. We do it for fun too. Mark, you know, is involved with the television operation that beams into Iran and beams all over Europe. And I don't think I'm saying anything out of school. I think he said the same thing on the air. Mark is uncomfortable being overly critical of the United States because he feels like he's doing something disloyal because it's being provided to people who are our enemies. Okay? I take a different tack on that completely. Because if it is right to criticize George Bush, if it is right to criticize the illegal occupation of Iraq here, then how is it not? How does it become less right because you're outside the territorial confines of the United States? You know, this, where I am, behind this microphone, what I'm doing, this isn't some crappy little 5,000-watt station beaming around the corner that can't reach more than 5 or 10,000 people. This beams out over the Internet. This goes to anywhere on the face of this sweet little blue-green marble, this little time machine hurtling through the universe. Anybody with a computer and an Internet connection anywhere on this planet can get this program. Does that mean I'm doing something wrong because I'm pointing out that the plan to murder Iran is wrong here? If it's wrong here, isn't it wrong in Tehran? If it's wrong here, isn't it wrong in Basra? Isn't it wrong in Baghdad? Isn't it wrong everywhere? At what point does the murder of 750,000 civilians become okay? Taylor Marsh. At what point do I have to censor myself? At what point does Congressman Kucinich have to censor himself? At what point, his silence is his acceptance. If he had not said something about the illegal occupation of Iraq, his silence would have been his acceptance. And unless I miss my, unless I just forget, we are told, and I agree, that, for instance, the Holocaust was wrong. It was wrong in Germany. It was wrong in Poland. It was wrong wherever it took place. And it was wrong for the United States and Britain to turn more or less of a blind eye to it. But under Taylor Marsh's way of looking at things, and under Rahm Emanuel's way of looking at things, the Holocaust is only, the ovens at Dachau and Bergen-Belsen and Auschwitz are only wrong there. To say that you can't criticize the president, that you cannot criticize American foreign policy outside the territorial confines of the United States is the equivalent of saying, well, I don't like the idea of baking human beings, but I'll shut up about it once you get the ovens hot. And my morals don't allow that. I don't know about yours. George Bush is an evil man in Washington, D.C. He's an evil man in Seattle. He's an evil man in Chicago. George Bush is an evil man in Zip City, Alabama. He's an evil man in Osage, Missouri. Guess what? George Bush and Dick Cheney are evil in Paris. They're evil in London. They're evil in Moscow. They're evil in Kabul. They are evil in Baghdad and Fallujah and Nineveh. Because evil is not geographic. Evil is a mathematical constant. It's as evil anywhere on this planet, northern hemisphere or southern, eastern hemisphere or western. Evil is evil is evil is evil. What is that, the cumulative property of evil? Bombing civilians is evil wherever you do it. Bombing civilians is evil whenever you do it. Bombing civilians is evil however you do it. Okay? Is that such a chore? Is that so hard to see? Dennis Kucinich goes to Syria and he says he believes in strength through peace. Because, of course, the neocons and the bloodthirsty murderers who are running this country right now believe in peace through strength. In other words, we will have peace no matter how many of you we have to kill to get it. Which is, of course, no peace at all. The occupation of Iraq is wrong. It was wrong when it began. It is wrong now. It will be wrong when it ends. And it will stop being wrong only after it ends. And I don't know where this Taylor Marsh person comes from with this notion that Rahm Emanuel is the go-to guy on political ethics. Because there's an article out there, I read it just today, I thought I had it in front of me, but I don't. I think it came from Truthout. That points up the fact that Rahm Emanuel actively solicited conservative candidates to run against anti-war candidates in the 2006 election cycle. Let that one settle in for just a minute. Let the import and the effect of that get all the way down into your bloodstream. Rahm Emanuel, who was running the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, actively solicited conservatives to run against anti-war Democrats. I'll say it again. Rahm Emanuel actively solicited conservatives, former Republicans even, to run against anti-war Democrats. It has been confirmed now that he used the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee as his personal bully pulpit to shape the 2006 elections, to keep the war going. I say it again, to keep the war going. This is not the guy you quote when you're looking for some sort of ethical benchmark. Go and find the article at Truthout. Read it for yourself. You'll find that he undermined a number of valid, viable, progressive campaigns and actively promoted people that he knew would come into Congress and not lift a finger to end the occupation of Iraq. That's one of those moments when you look up and you say, as the trade unionists of old used to say when they found out there was a company man who'd been slithered into their midst, we've been sold. We've been sold. We have been. So, you know, with all due respect to Ms. Marsh, I'll stand with Dennis Kucinich. Because I trust Dennis Kucinich to say the right thing wherever and whenever. That's what makes him so special. That's what makes him so extraordinary an American politician. Because he's not concerned with the territorial borders of where he's speaking the truth. He's concerned with the accuracy of speaking the truth and the honesty of speaking the truth. This is just, you know, the other thing, and I guess what she's upset about is that he praised Syria. And he did praise Syria to the extent that he noted that what most people are not aware of is that Syria has taken more than 1.5 million Iraqi refugees in. And he said, and this is a quote, the Syrian government has actually shown a lot of compassion in keeping its doors open and being a host for so many refugees. I guess Taylor Marsh would prefer that they'd been machine gunned at the border. I don't know. Kucinich said he would ask UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to follow up on the dire conditions in southern Lebanon, especially Israeli cluster bombs left over from the war that have killed more than 30 and injured at least 200 since the fighting's end. There has to be a commitment to cleaning up these cluster bombs, he said. Oh, bad, Kucinich, bad, arguing that Israeli cluster bombs that need to be cleaned up. You know, Israeli cluster bombs that we probably built in the first place. That they need to be cleaned up so they won't blow away any more 3-year-old children playing in the dirt. Because 3-year-old children have a right to be 4-year-old children and 5-year-old children without being blown to bits by some piece of ordnance left over from an illegal war. And this is what has Taylor Marsh's panties in a wad? And somehow or another, the Nancy Pelosi's stance was more appropriate? What's more appropriate than suggesting that little children get to grow up? That politics ends at the water's edge. I hate stupid aphorisms like that. I despise them. We'll take a break and come back from the news, and then to your phone calls to 877-443-2366. 877-4-HEAD-ON, or on your nickel, 304-658-5453. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A report that says the U.S. should let Iraqi troops take over more control of their country's security has sparked debate in Congress on how to avoid sending the country into chaos. The same report says it will take at least 18 months before Iraq's security forces will be able to assume control. An internet agency that monitors Islamic websites reports that Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden will release a new video addressing the American people about the 9/11 anniversary. Intel Center says that statement is expected in the next 72 hours. U.S. and Iraqi forces have launched a massive operation targeting Al-Qaeda in northern Iraq. At least 26,000 troops are involved. 16 Saudi Arabian prisoners released from Guantanamo Bay arrived in Riyadh today. Pressure to release the country's captives increased when 2 Saudi prisoners committed suicide in June. 8 Russian bombers got very near Norway's airspace, so much so that Norwegian fighter jets scrambled, as did 4 British fighters. Norway says it's the third time since mid-July the same scenario is played out. Syria and Israel clashed today. Syrian officials say an Israeli aircraft dumped munitions in their country, so they opened fire. Experts say tensions have been building between the longtime foes all summer. In Nicaragua, the death toll from Hurricane Felix has risen to 65. Officials report discovering 25 dead fishermen along the Mosquito Coast. What's left of the Category 5 storm is still dumping rain throughout Central America. A federal judge struck down a portion of the U.S. Patriot Act, ruling it is unconstitutional. The section of the anti-terror law that permits the FBI to send Internet service providers secret demands for customer information was found to violate the First Amendment. The ACLU brought the suit at a time when the Bush administration is seeking to expand the surveillance powers. The Justice Department warned the FCC that it should not impose regulations barring broadband Internet companies from charging fees for priority web traffic. The Justice Department says not allowing fees could deter innovation and upgrading and limit consumer choice. The world is paying tribute today to operatic tenor Luciano Pavarotti, who died this morning in Italy at age 71. You're listening to Quality News Network.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. when your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother. I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher, and you tell her you're too tired to look for it. I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Researchers say they pinpointed a virus that is tied to colony collapse disorder, a condition that's affected 50 to 90% of U.S. commercial bee colonies. The virus shows up only in hives that have suffered the disorder. Whether it is a cause or just a marker isn't yet clear. The CDC reports the suicide rate for girls ages 10 to 14 has gone up 76% to the highest level in more than a decade. In Washington, D.C., tens of thousands of Chinese-made condoms distributed in an anti-AIDS campaign have been rejected. Their packaging was defective. The Mortgage Bankers Association reports that this spring, the number of homeowners who received foreclosure notices was up to a record high. It's the third consecutive quarter that's happened. Apple CEO Steve Jobs apologizes for dropping the price of the popular new iPhone 2 months after it debuted. Jobs sent a letter to customers who already bought the iPhones, offering them a $100 store credit. And Starbucks has opened its first coffee shop in Russia after a 2-year legal battle. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $76.30 a barrel. Gold is trading at $704.60 an ounce. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow finished up 58 points at 13,363. The NASDAQ was up 8, S&P up 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
All righty then, 6.5 minutes past the hour, the final hour begins. That sounds so final. Program note, there will be no live Strictly Confidential this evening. Our good friend, our IT professional, and the world's most fabulous talk radio host, Peter Godbold, is recuperating from 2 or 3 really bad days. You know, reloading servers and fun stuff like that. You know, stuff that takes from like 3 a.m. to 3 p.m. and whoa. But he assures me that he will be back live tomorrow evening to get your weekend started right. And to the phones we go. Albert is calling from Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well, and happy birthday, I'm told.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm getting up there. It's unbelievable.
Hand me down my walking cane.
To be honest, you know, the only things that, you know, I'm kind of outrage fatigued.
Yeah, me too. I know that.
I mean, yeah, it's just...
I realized last night that something was terribly wrong with me when I said in regard to the coming attack on Iran, for Christ's sakes, just do it.
Well, I can get into that in a second. But
okay.
I mean, just because it is an issue, and we certainly have to talk about it, and I just want to just, you know, refresh your memory as to how long you and I have been talking about us attacking Iran.
Over a year.
All of a sudden, it's like my friend who passed away last year. Him and I would speak, and we would talk, and we would always be like, "Up, we're going to go into Iraq. We're going to do this. Up, this is going to happen." And eventually gets to a point where, you know, like, you guys are, when you channel so much, you're right all the time. It gets sickening, and you can't even, you don't even want to talk about it anymore. You just kind of like just sit there and just say, "Yep, mm-hmm. Well, look at this headline. Oh, see this news article? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Figures." I mean, this is what we're looking at now. I mean, we're you know, that bailout they did in terms of the financial markets, that's nothing. That's we don't even have the numbers of August's foreclosures. We're not going to have the numbers of September's until, you know, November. And, you know, there's a whole other, you know, there's a whole other part next year where this is all going to, I believe it was the Federal Housing Authority is talking about there's going to be around 750,000 foreclosures this year.
Jesus.
Now, that's a good thing only if you own rental property. I mean, when people can't have a, you know, like, I watched the movie Conversations with God just the other day, and if you haven't seen it, I recommend picking it up. It's actually, it's a neat little movie, and he was homeless for a while, and he was trying to get a job, so he couldn't be homeless, but, you know, when you don't have a house, it's really tough to get a job because you don't have a phone.
Yeah.
And you don't have any kind of, you know, address or anything like that, and he wound up getting a job and all that other stuff, and then he, you know, then he loses it because the place goes bankrupt. And what we're seeing here, I mean, when people now all of a sudden they're going to go and, another thing about jobs that is kind of important that people, a lot of people forget, is they check your credit history. You know, like they check that stuff to see, you know, if it's a corporation, they'll check your credit history and they'll say, oh man, this guy's got a foreclosure, he's got this, he's got that, no, we don't want this. We want somebody with a little cleaner history. You know, we want somebody who's, you know, oh, he's got tickets. I mean, I remember I got, when I was a little younger, I got tickets in New York, and I couldn't afford to pay them, and so I just never did. And, I mean, I have been refused a job because I had, like, a moving violation of 5 miles an hour that I couldn't afford to pay. So it's kind of one of those, you know, it's definitely a catch-22 situation. But when we're looking at the outrages that just never ever cease to stop, it doesn't end, Bob. I mean, we're sitting here in 2007, right? You think we've learned anything. I mean, granted, I will say that, you know, I mean, in terms of Dennis Kucinich, because I believe, as you do, that Dennis Kucinich is really our best shot at actually, you know, getting some traction. He's like putting your floor mats in your car. If you ever get stuck in the mud, you put your floor mats underneath your wheels so you can get a little traction and get out of there.
Yep.
You know, he's kind of like, he's the floor mats in that respect. And what I want to say about that is in the grassroots that I hear and like in just the websites that I visit, I'm seeing him get far more support now. It seems like I read an editorial cartoon the other day with him, and they did, you know, him with each debate. And then at the end, there's these little cartoon characters that say, you know, I think he's getting taller.
And
that's how it is. I mean, my hope for Dennis Kucinich, beer, enemas, and my children are what getting me through this time period. Because, I mean, it's so much crap.
You did not just say beer enemas.
No, I didn't say beer enema. I just said beer and enemas because.
Okay.
I gotta, you know, you gotta numb it and eat, and then you gotta flush it out because this is just,
yeah.
It's unbelievable. We're talking Iran. All right, let's talk about Iran. Rahm Emanuel, right? All these Hillary, all these DLCers, they want to go into Iran badly. They definitely want to do that because you know this. There's no difference there. I mean, you know, I and this is one of.
Do you know why though, Albert? Do you know why?
Well, who pays them? Who feeds them?
No, but wait. Now there's more to it. You know, to the extent that we've watched the Bush presidency and we've said that there was a lot of Oedipal dynamic going on. You know, the whole go take Baghdad thing was a thing about you know the weird psychology between him and his daddy. Well, there's some weird psychology here too, and that is that these hawk Democrats want to go into Iran so that they can, you know, so that they can say, look, we did it right. We're not a screw up like George Bush.
Mistakes. We fixed President Carter's mistakes.
Right.
Maybe that's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, they think they're going to fix that, fix his legacy. Well, I guess, you know, the last two one term presidents of the last, you know, couple decades are those two guys, and Bush and Carter. So, yeah, we'll finish what they started.
It makes me just want to scream though because there's so little forethought in this. The idea that somehow the war can be I don't understand Rahm Emanuel's thinking in believing that the war is a good issue for Democrats or staying. You know, let's stay there until we get the presidency so that you know we can hang it on Bush. And meanwhile, the Republicans are about two dozen moves ahead, and they've already planned that you know they know the war will end if a Democrat gets in, and they're going to hang losing the war on the Democrat and make the Democrat a one-termer so Jeb can be president in 2012. And it just makes me want to open a vein.
Try a coffee enema first before you do that.
I'm decaffeinated, dude. It wouldn't help.
It helps. no, but you know, the only thing I'm just got to say about this is there is a reason why we see such a parallel between these two groups, these two quote-unquote separate political wings. Okay, they're not. And the more I look at them, the more you can, I mean, the more everyone sees it. The more you look at them, the more you see, wow, they're both the same wings of the bird, of, you know, there's just different wings of the same bird. Now, what I'm sitting here looking at is, I mean, first off, I just want to state that unless we use weapons, I mean, massive weapons of mass destruction, Iran is going to, they're going to beat on us, okay? I mean, it's a bad thing for, I mean, it's just military strategy, okay? I mean, that was one of those things that I took when I was going to school. I took a year of nothing but, I mean, well, not nothing but I took a year of tactics and strategies, okay? And, I mean, I studied this stuff, and, I mean, if I was playing the game, if I was in charge of the risk board, that would be the last place I'd go into. I mean, they have all those little star things, and they're packed into a big, huge pile. I mean, they don't have the sanctions that Iraq did. They don't have the crumbling infrastructure. I mean, they're not, you know, a first-world nation or any by any means, but at the same time, I mean...
But they've got some pretty good weapons because we built them.
Well, plus they have, you know, Russia's top-of-the-line stuff.
And they got some French stuff. And
oh, yeah.
And they got some Chinese stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then they build their own. And, you know, at the same time, I mean, we're going to sit here and look at, I mean, I just, you know, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again about this missile. You know, there's the Exocet, the French built, and that sunk three British warships.
HMS Sheffield comes to mind.
Yep, during the Falklands campaign. They only had six of them, and they shot four of them, and they sank three ships, okay, with this missile, okay? Now, that missile, there's countermeasures to it now. You know, now it's been 20-something years. There's other, the Yakutsk, the Sunburn. Okay, those missiles, there is no defense. They move at Mach 3. They go 10 feet over the water, and they go up, and they do all these zig, 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 zigs. They can, I mean, they can pinpoint which, the missile itself, not the person that fires it, the missile themselves can figure out which ship out of all the ship in the fleet is the carrier, and that's where it goes after. And these things can be topped with a nuclear arm. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not saying Iran has nuclear weapons, but if they did and they tapped onto one of these missiles and they sent it to a fleet, oh, I'll tell you what, we would see, you know, something that make Pearl Harbor look like a picnic.
Well, what was that number we had? I don't even remember if you and I were talking that night, Albert, but we had a story a couple of months ago maybe that said that The United States Navy has something like a third of our assets are in or around the Persian Gulf right now.
Oh yeah, we have three carrier groups there, and I mean, the carrier groups are, you know, they're I mean, it's a carrier, it's a bunch of destroyers, it's some minesweepers, it's
a couple of submarines.
Yeah, submarines. It's a whole it's a whole thing. It's a whole group, and you know, the only things that would, I mean, if it was, you know, if it was a, you know, a nuclear tip. Yakutsk missile, you know, cruise missile, anti-ship missile, and it was one of those, and it would take out all those ships, and the subs might be okay. Actually, no, the subs would probably be annihilated, too, depending on how deep they were. But, I mean, and that's the other thing. Then they talk, I mean, we just happened to put a couple of nuclear missiles on a straddle fortress and sent it across the country. We had no idea where it was. Please.
Yeah.
Please. I mean, you guys talk about homeland security. You're the ones making pregnant mothers drink their breast milk, all right? You're sitting there doing all this crap, and you same scumbag cannibal bastards are going to sit here and lose for 30 minutes, whatever. You're gonna misplace six nuclear missiles? You know, I'm going to watch my mouth, Bob, because, I mean, that outrages me to unbelievable levels. I mean, I don't know how many people...
Well, really is it the story, or is it the they expect you to believe the story that outrages you, Albert?
It's the whole... You know me, I can come at and I can actually hold a few dichotomies in my head at the same time and believe every one of them. And it's the entire thing. It's everything, and it's everything how it's related to everything else. It is just absolutely insanity. It's incredible insanity. Now wait a minute, what are they doing? All right, first of all, nuclear weapons. All right, if they're gonna, how can you believe that? Shouldn't there be some like a sign? I mean, wouldn't there be a sign on the things, you'd think? Right? You know, just, I mean, something that you can print.
Nuclear weapon, do not strap to bomber that's flying in the United States. Sure.
Maybe. Nuclear weapon, just make sure you know, something. Something. Anything. You know, make sure you sign these out. Or anything. You know, anything. Any kind of little, tiny little grip of anything. It's just, you know, now granted, now nobody get worried. If the plane would have had a malfunction and crashed, the missiles wouldn't have went off. That's besides the point. I mean, nobody has to worry about that. It's a whole other concept of, you know, like we're supposed to be worried about Russia's lost nuclear weapons. I mean, and you should be. I mean, these are nuclear weapons. I don't know how many people really grasp.
Yeah, I know. Well, let's back up a minute. You were talking about the. You were talking about the potential naval things.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've got another nightmare. Okay, and that is a whole bunch of you know, just plain old fashioned Iranian ground forces. You know, mm-hmm. grunts, military infantry. You know,
mm-hmm.
and we do the rain of death on them, on Iran, and they pour across the Iraqi border.
Oh yeah.
And march in, is anybody out there going to sit and try to tell me that we're able to defend ourselves against a real military incursion? I'm not talking about some dude with a bomb by the side of the road.
Yeah.
You know, that's the stuff where they pick us off two and three at a time, and I know what the purpose of that is. It's demoralization, and it, mm-hmm. you know, but you know, a real the NBN foo kind of thing.
Mm.
And we're gonna counter that how? Because all of our assets are busy dealing with targets in Iran. You know, when they're talking about the first wave targeting 1,284 some odd targets and a total of 10,000 targets selected overall.
Mm-hmm. Well, excuse me.
Go ahead. I mean, but you see my point, I think.
Without a doubt, we didn't even get into that yet, but we can stay on this. That's not a problem with me.
Okay.
First of all, they just purchased, and I don't even know how many. I was reading on one of the, you know, they got the Russian version of Jane's Defense Weekly, because
mm-hmm.
I try to get as many sources of information as I can. I am an information sponge. One of the things that they talk about is, I didn't believe it's SA-800 or 400. I can't remember the exact moniker of the missile, that the air defense missile system. But this air defense missile system that they now have is talk about these missiles being able to target stealth planes. Okay, I mean, and to do it with incredible accuracy and incredible speed. Now, they have multiple warheads. And it's just unbelievable in terms of what we think we're just going to walk in there. You know, I mean, this isn't a country that's had a no-fly zone. And I'm not trying to say, oh, well, their fighter jets will come and, you know, and give us competition. They have air defenses up the yin-yang. I mean, this is a country, it's kind of like Korea is. There's a reason we don't go into North Korea, Bob, okay? And one of that reasons is they don't have any resources, okay? That's, you know, we have to understand this is a war over the final resources of the earth. Okay, this is about who's going to control it when Jesus comes. Okay, that's what this is about. All right, and that's first and foremost. That's why it's the Democrats and the Republicans. That's why they're, you know, both the same kind of, oh well, we have to do this, because in the long run, if people in this country can't, all right, if they can't drive their cars, they can't go on their snowmobiles, they can't mow their lawn three times a week, there's going to be massive problems. They can't get to work. They can't do anything like that. Heating oil costs $800 a month in the winter. I mean, when that stuff happens, which if we go into Iran, that stuff will happen because of what Iran has bunkered themselves with. The same thing like North Korea, their entire country, just like in Vietnam, was like tunnels, but North Korea has like real tunnels, like in entire bases underground and, you know, under mountains and everything else like that. I mean, they have been at war with us for a long time. Granted, they're very poor and all that other stuff, but I'll tell you what, if we go in there, they're going to fight us tooth and nail to the very last man, and we're going to be in trouble. The same kind of thing is going to happen with Iran, who have been building, and they know their region, first of all. Okay, and granted, we have the satellites, we have all that, the reconnaissance and all that stuff, but, you know, they know their region. They know if they have all these anti-ship missiles, Exocets, Yakuts, and Sunburns, okay, those are there, and they have thousands of them, okay, oil out of the area, what happens? The military is one of the largest consumers of petroleum on Earth. The Navy consumes more diesel fuel than the entire Earth. All right, they consume diesel fuel like forget it. That's why they were talking about the e-diesel fuel. But regardless, they do that, okay? And all of a sudden, I mean, we're already looking at oil at $75, and is as imaginary or not imaginary as that price is. If we go into Iran, it's, I mean, it's not just, you know, the Iranian oil that's not going to be on the market. It's the Kuwaiti oil. It's,
well, and yeah, I had a Chris Hedges article last night, Albert, that pointed out that one of the first things the Iranians will likely do is bomb the snot out of the Saudi oil installations.
Oh, they have missiles that can reach very easily. Very easily. I mean, and that's the other thing. They have, ground-to-ground missiles. I mean, we're going to get rained out. We think the little mortars in Iraq, I mean, if we think we've seen casualties, I mean, if we're sick of seeing, you know, 3,000, that's the thing I don't really, that's the disconnect. That's the massive disconnect. And maybe, you know, maybe McCain's right when, you know, anybody who questions him is a little jerk and they need to get drafted, you know, in that respect, because that's their big plan, because they're going to need it. We're going to need that kind of manpower, because if we think that people are outraged over, excuse me, you know, 50,000 grievously wounded, many other psychologically wounded, and, you know, what, almost 4,000 dead, all right, killed in action, that are U.S. citizens, and, you know, not the all these, you know, guys from Central America and the Philippines and stuff like that that come over here to be, you know, and this is another part people got to remember, that these people from foreign countries sign up for our military forces so they can get a green card. And then when they die and their parents don't have their green card yet, they get deported. But anyway, one of these things that we really got to consider is the Iranians have 40,000 suicide bombers. Just that, you know, guys that are ready to strap them on and go, okay, and go to Allah and whatever, all right? They have 40,000 of these people. And that's just, you know, our defense estimates. How do we know how many they really have? You know, it's not easy for us.
And everything, you know, everything that you're laying out, Albert, makes perfect sense. I mean, it's reasonable, it's rational, it's thought out. Who in their right mind would start, knowing what the blowback likely will be, who in their right mind would do this? I mean, that's why I keep asking, Albert, for heaven's sakes.
Well, Bob, hang on.
Okay.
No, just hang on for one second. That's why we have to talk about this. This is why this is especially now more than ever. Now the question we have to ask ourselves is, yeah, I've laid all this out. You know, they've got military, they've got all this stuff, they're going to put a beating on us, especially that we don't even have, we don't even have the manpower out over there. I mean, granted, and we, you know, and they have the air defense. They're kind of a military force. They're real, you know.
This ain't Iraq.
Well, Iraq, in a sense, when we invaded them the first time, you know, they were still recoiling, trying to rebuild from their war with Iran. But the thing is, though, is because of the strategic choke points that in that region has and all that other stuff, what I want to kind of say is anybody who sits there and says, oh, wow, oh, no, it's raining my beer. Anyway, anybody who really, like, kind of looks at the details of this and says, whoa, that's not a smart thing to do at all, they have to consider and they have to ask this question. What kind of situation, what Pearl Harbor, what Gulf of Tonkin, what 9/11 is going to be that's going to make the people of this country forget all about everything I just told you? What's it going to make them, I mean, not that they even know, but what's going to make them forget all about that, and we'll be in a blind rage? To actually, the only thing that we can actually do is send over a couple of ICBMs, because that's the only thing that we're going to be able to do to have, you know, acceptable casualties on our side. That's the only thing we got. Bob, they're tactical second generation, third, fifth generation nuclear weapons. That's what we're going to use.
I'm not talking about what you're saying. I'm talking about the overall possibility. None of it makes a lick of sense, a dime's worth of sense. Because, you know, how's Great Britain going to feel for their oil supply being choked off? How's France going to feel? How's Japan going to feel?
Well,
how's Australia going to feel? You know, these are our buddies.
Well, I think...
And if we light up Iran, all of their oil dries up. All of it.
Well, for a little bit. And so does China. And, you know, then there's... I mean, I think, and that's another reason why they're trying to move it. They're trying to move into this Iranian thing so quickly because, as I stated before, and as I will continue to state until you and I are talking over strings and cans, is the oil is running out. nobody's more aware of that than these people. They know this. Now, the American people might know it in the back of their head, but it's like, you know, it's like being told you have, you know, a genetic disorder. You just put it out of your head and hope it goes away. Okay, and that's kind of what, that's how the American people are. We just hope it goes away. Oh, man, you know, I'm going to buy a new TV. I'm going to buy a new computer. I'm going to buy two new cars. I'm going to do, I mean, I might have neighbors that can keep talking like this. I'm just going to keep consuming and consuming and consuming. And that's what we do, because now we have this, you know, what are you doing? No sword fighting. Come here. I'm getting them ready to invade Iran. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I know.
I'm raising some
sword fighting
invaders. Anyway, you know, like, we sit here, as I say, in 2000, and as the resources of this country, I mean, we're supposed to hit the peak, you know, according to some of these geologists, we're supposed to hit the peak in 2006, or 2000, you know, between 2006, between 2009. A couple guys put it out a little further, but that's kind of like the whole climate crisis issue. I mean, you know, who are you going to believe? When are the ice caps going to be gone? Every time we turn around, we look and we see, oh, wow, it's melting faster and faster. And according, if it keeps melting at this rate, it'll be gone in 100 years. Well, the next year comes and they say, well, if it keeps melting at this rate, it'll be gone in 80 years. And it just keeps going dwindling and dwindling. And do we stop consuming? Do we slow it down? No, and this is another reason why we need Dennis Kucinich. We need somebody who's actually going to make us... The only way we can stop going into these wars, Bob, is if we actually sit there and do something with the limited resources we have left to create more sustainable energy sources, okay? If we don't do that, we will... I mean, it's going to be a bad video game, this life of ours on this planet.
I know, but look at the interconnectedness of all of it, Albert. What kind of $200,000 or $300,000 a year genius do we have in the Pentagon that says, yeah, but we can win? I mean, this is where you get down to the Dr. Strangelove scene where George C. Scott is sitting there looking at the president. Now, Mr. President, I'm not going to tell you that we're not going to get our hair mussed, but I'm telling you, no more than 20 to 30 million killed. That's it, tops. That's where we are right now. I'm convinced that that's what's inside the Pentagon. These people who can't comprehend that actions have consequences. They've got this notion that I guess they're going to apply the Powell Doctrine. But the Powell Doctrine, you know, the overwhelming force against superior numbers and yeah, blah, 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 blah. That only works if the other side can't fight back. What makes us so convinced that the Iranians can't fight back? Or won't fight back? And part of this, and that's the addict thinking, the magical thinking that's being engaged in here, Albert. We've got people in Washington who honestly think that 60% of the population of Iran that is under 25 years old, that when the bombs start falling, they're going to go, yay, hooray, my grandmother just got blown into a million pieces. I'm going to overturn the government. Hell no, that's not going to happen. It's never happened in human existence. When you attack somebody's country, the country generally comes together to repel the attacker.
Well, bombs don't know an ideology. Bombs don't know any kind of other thing than what they hit. And, you know, they just happen to wind
up
hitting...
But you're not going to get regime change by committing wholesale murder against the nation of Iran.
You know, and I'll tell you, that's another issue. We're not going to get regime change, keep fighting wars and the rhetoric that we continue. I mean, did the rhetoric that we did in Vietnam, did that change the regime? Did it? Did the rhetoric that we ever do, did it really change Russia? I mean, the rhetoric is never going to work. It's all it's going to do is make people dig deeper in their trenches. You can't sit there and use threats. You can't sit there, I mean, threats of mass destruction. You know, and I don't understand what, and we all know, okay, now hold on now. Hold on. I'm going to talk about Israel because that's the one issue that everyone has to avoid. Okay, it's the one thing that nobody can talk about. All right, you can't talk about Israel. There, you know, you're an anti-Semite, which is a disgusting frame of mind. It's such a cop-out in terms of actually having a conversation that can actually do something. But Israel is the main driving force of this whole thing, okay, and in terms of going into Iran.
Because they want to be the only country in the Middle East that has nukes.
Well, even beyond that, you know, I mean, we sit here and look at... what was it? They just came out and they said, We told the Pentagon not to go into Iraq. They should have went in. Oh, really? Really? You were saying that? Oh, that's funny. I don't remember you guys saying that. Even though I'm sure you wanted it, you know, I remember you guys saying, yeah, we have to get rid of Saddam. He's a threat to the, you know, state of Israel, and blah, 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 blah. You know, but you're talking to Strange, the Dr. Strange loves, and you're talking, yeah, no doubt about it, Bob. These are the same people, okay? The same people that on 9/10/2001, all right, when that Skeletor bastard Rumsfeld came out and said, oh, we've lost, we've misplaced, oh, we forgot, we don't know, $2 trillion. $2 trillion. Just so, like, these are the same people that came out and they, I mean, the GAO comes out and says, you guys spent $27.4 billion on stickers? Smiley face stickers? $27.4 billion on military-grade smiley face stickers.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's a, you know, if that's just a joke or some satire or what have you, but is that far from what happens? No, because we buy, when we need one hammer, we buy 10 at the price of $10,000 a piece.
Well, I mean, there was a woman sentenced a couple of weeks ago who charged nearly $1 million in shipping for a 15-cent bolt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We had talked about that, no doubt. I mean, but you know, and this is the thing. I got to say it again. This is the math. Okay, $1 million, right? $1 million is more money than the working class people that you and I and everyone that's listening to this, except the COINTELPRO guys are doing. $1 million probably more would do more good for our lives than we could imagine, all right, just in terms of our standard of living and health and all that other stuff. It's not you know, a complete enormous amount of money anymore, but it's a good chunk of money that a lot of people still can't really imagine having $1 million in the bank account. What would they do with it? Now, that's 1 million seconds is 11 and a half days, okay? $1 billion is something that nobody can comprehend what it is. A billion seconds is 35 years, okay? But then when the Pentagon scum talk about losing $2 trillion, nobody has, not even these people that steal it, don't even have any idea what kind of money this is. This 30, in terms of seconds, a trillion seconds is 31,688 years. So when you break all that into money, what would $2 trillion do for world peace? I mean, instead of us going and, you know...
Yeah, oh, no, you could heal a lot of wounds. You know, the $9 billion that we lost in the Coalition Provisional Authority was 18 semi-tractor truck loads, if I recall the calculation correctly. Yep. And in $100 bills.
Yep.
Yeah, so, no, I conceptualize it pretty well, I think. But, you know, I keep coming back to the same question, Albert, again, and, you know, Israel, you know, yeah, sure, Israel wags us. There's no doubt about it. You know, there's a reason that America's problems have, you know, sort of started with, well, I better not say it, or, you know, the Mossad will visit me or something. Another study that I saw has come out recently in the United States. As the generations of Jewish Americans get younger and younger and younger, support for Israel begins to wane. They've noticed it. They've verified it, and it can't help but be that way because whether anybody likes it or not, this is just a redo on the 12th century Kingdom of Jerusalem concept that started with the Crusades. You set up a state; it's artificial. You support it from a distance. It cannot exist on its own without intense support from other parts of the world far removed from it. And it just is what it is. Historically, it is what it is. There's not an anti-Semitic bone in my body. Not one.
Oh, no.
But you can't help recognizing the dynamic that's brought into play by this. You know, am I saying that the Arabs are lily white? Or pure as the driven snow, or whatever kind of... No, I'm not. Among other things, you know, if you look at the end of the First World War, here we go. The Hashemites were led by Prince Faisal, and they were the ones who worked with Lawrence of Arabia, okay? And they got Transjordan, Syria, and Iraq. And in fact, if you watch the movie, you know, the one with Peter O'Toole, the guy who's played by Alec Guinness winds up king of Iraq, King Faisal of Iraq.
Yep.
Okay? Along about 1925, with a little bit of American finagling, the Hashemites also controlled the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. They controlled Mecca and Medina, yada, yada, yada. Well, while their backs were turned, we backed the House of Ibn Saud.
Yep.
And the House of Ibn Saud were a bunch of rat bastards that you would not, you know, that you wouldn't turn your back on in a blind alley. But we backed them to get control of the Saudi oil fields to balance the British control of the Persian oil fields.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a natural mess. It is a mess that is man-made, and it's a Western-made mess. From the creation of Israel to the seating of the House of Ibn Saud, to the creation of these kingdom states like Jordan and Syria and Iraq, you move forward in time to the deposition of Mohammad Mossadegh, democratically elected in Iran, in favor of what was his name, Reza Pahlavi, the Shah.
The Shah, yeah.
Who brought in, you know, the most brutal secret police that region's ever known, the Savak.
Yeah, well,
and it's all our doing. The Persians didn't do it. The Arabians didn't do it. The Israelis didn't do it.
And
we did it.
You just reminded me of something, Bob. You know, it's quite funny. I don't happen to pull the link off my head. I can't quite remember it, but I just saw a link that was in a magazine back in the 70s, or in the early 70s, late 60s, when the Shah was in power. Talking about nuclear power. I think it was 1972. All right. And it said, you know, guess who's building nuclear reactors, right? And there's a big picture of the Shah of Iran, right? Yeah, he's sitting on, and then, you know how the ads used to be back in the day. They used to be a lot more, words in the ads. Nowadays, it's just pictures. But they said, he's sitting on, you know, a third, 30% of the world's oil, blah, 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 blah. And he still knows that one day it's going to run out, and so that's why he's building nuclear power. So you're telling me, that was from the Nuclear Power whatever Corporation of America. Now you're telling me that via that ad in 1972, when the Shah, our boy, was there, nuclear power for Iran was okay.
Yeah,
that was something that was a. Yeah, because he's going to.
And see, the other thing worth remembering is that the Shah was basically the same guy as Saddam, okay?
Oh.
A strong man who ruled a fairly disparate people with an iron hand. And, you know, things were good for you if you stayed on the Shah's good side, just like things were good for you if you stayed on Saddam's good side.
Yep.
The Shah had his own torture rooms and rape rooms. The Shah killed out of hand through his henchmen.
Did he ever?
Sure. There are not a dime's worth of difference, you know, except maybe in the breeding. There's not a dime's worth of difference between Saddam and Reza Pahlavi. They are the same kind of strongman thug that evolution or systems analysis or whatever says will arise in that part of the world. As a precursor, you know, before you can ever get to a democracy or anything like that, all these, you know, you wind up with a chief or a strong man or, you know, a thug who keeps everybody in line, whether it's the Shah or Saddam Hussein or the Marshal Tito.
All are creations. And there's a reason for that, and it's right back into the resource angle. It's because of the resources in the region. We don't care about democracy. Come on. Who are you kidding?
No.
I mean,
I don't think these fools even think that they can create democracy. There was a story out a couple of days ago where basically the Bush administration says, we're not so much about democracy anymore. We'll settle for stable.
Exactly. Yeah,
and at that point, I just went, because stable is what you had under Saddam. Stable is where, as long as you're on Saddam's good side, and, you know, if you're female, you can wear pants, and you can go to university and be a professor or a pharmacist, or you can own a store, or you can be a Christian, or you can sell liquor.
You.
Okay?
You.
Yeah.
And you know, the same thing obtained to a certain, and but it's all about what the harmony or stasis or whatever, and it's a choice as far as the United States is concerned, as if it were any of our damn business. You know, what do you want? You want stability or you want freedom? You know, their work that, to some extent or another, the Iraqi parliament has manifested little inklings toward being its own creature, like going on vacation. Screw you, George. We're taking vacation. It's hot in Baghdad.
Or being an Islamic republic.
Or being an Israel. And all of a sudden, we weren't so crazy about democracy anymore, were we?
Oh, no. Well, because whatever gets us what we want is what we want. Without a doubt, that's an addict's way of thinking. The people that are the addicts are the power addicts. I mean, the oil schmoil, if it was green goo, it would be green goo. It doesn't matter what the material is. It's the material they want. That's what they want. But the reason they want it is because it gives them power, and that's their problem. And that's, you know, I mean, that whole kind of thing. And just real quick, I just got to say, for the Sean Hannitys of the world that may be listening and saying, see, them liberals, they want Saddam back. Okay, because I know that's not what you're saying. But
no.
Just to make it clear, okay, we don't want Saddam back. We don't want that. We just want, as you said, as eloquent and as beautiful as can, and as simple as can be said, we want three-year-olds to have the right to become four-year-olds. And we don't want these kids at 3 and 4 years old to say, I hate America, I can't stand America, because you killed my family in my house. You killed my grandparents, you killed this. I mean, we're doing these things. Oh, they're going to do this. They're going to get a couple of people that might not have had the most stellar, reviews. You know, so we'll throw them in jail for the rest of their life. Who cares? We're not, you know, the ones that tell them to go in there and do that, we're not going to have to pay for it. We're not going to have to sit in jail. England, let her go sit in jail. Let all these other people, who cares? Who cares if what we did in Abu Ghraib is nothing new for behavior of this country and the military industrial complex that runs things? You know, that's what they do. That's, you know, let them, you know, let the one person that, you know, got caught, you know, that went to the School of America's, he was a C student, put him in jail. The rest of them, business as usual.
Okay, so let's bring this full circle, though, Albert. I've got another call I do have to get to,
okay.
But let's kind of bring this full circle. You started by saying that you've got fatigue. You're outrage fatigued.
Mm-hmm.
Are you really?
No.
Because as long as it's a matter of trying to see to it that 3-year-olds get to be 4-year-olds,
yeah.
Do we dare even indulge something like that? Something like that kind of fatigue? You know what? When it's right now, it's their 3-year-olds.
Yeah, it'll be ours.
We have no right to think that at some point it won't be ours.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Osama's greatest hits videotape is coming out soon, because you know we've been told, because there are websites and they say that, you know, there's going to be a new Osama tape, and he's got and apparently he's got a dye job on his beard and he doesn't have the white streaks through it anymore. I don't know. Somebody's done it. He's got.
He's gained weight, and his nose is a different shape. And
his kidneys are doing much better. But he's going to put a new tape out, and he's going to explain to, you know, it's his September 11th anniversary tape.
Oh, that's, you know...
I know, I make the same noises.
Bob, as we were talking about it, like, do we really trust this story about the nuclear weapons? You know, as I said, that's the dichotomy there. Now, where I don't have a dichotomy is the impeccable timing of Osama bin Laden. I just can't. I mean,
it's like they got a phone. It's like they've got a telephone line to him. Hey, could you put out a video? Oh, we're working on it right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, it's a little off color, so I don't want to say it, but if anybody's heard David Chappelle's most recent comedy bit, it's like what he said about Michael Jackson. How Michael Jackson seems to do something with a child every time they get into trouble.
Yeah.
So they call him up, Mike.
Well, I mean, at this point we are full blown into 1984 stuff. They're hauling out Osama and bringing us a new videotape at will. Now
what? With Goldberg?
Right? Goldberg.
Goldberg. Yeah.
Albert, good talking to you, brother. I always love these.
Love you, Bob.
Take care, man. Bye now.
Bye.
And, a quick announcement before we go to the next phone call. I am going really quickly. I have to tell you, you know, we do the little business with the fundraising and stuff. And your support of what we're doing here to help keep us on the air. We made August. We hit our $2,000 goal thanks to a genuine, I don't want to use people's names because I don't have permission, but a genuine angel came through. You are all angels. This was an angel of significant proportions. Came through the last minute, and Agnes really enjoyed talking to you, by the way. Thank you. That's the good news. We made August. Now I gotta kind of remind you that it's September, and we gotta make September too. Just a reminder. That's all. To Luke, who has been waiting forever and ever and ever. Luke, thank you for your patience.
Bob?
Yes.
Hey.
Thanks for your patience, my friend.
Okay. Now, the thing I liked last night was the, I don't know if you played any of the sound of it, was the Ron Paul and Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, I had to watch that. I hate to say it, but there was a lot of candor in that that you can't seem to even get out of the Democrats these days.
Oh, no. I mean, and Ron Paul, every time Mike Huckabee would give him some line, Ron Paul would just turn it right back on him. And you did notice that they I'm sure it probably disappeared from their website 5 minutes later, but you did see who won their poll on the debate.
Yeah.
Ron Paul.
Yeah. You know, but I still have a real problem with Ron Paul.
I do, too. Yeah.
I mean, anybody who puts out a newsletter that says 95% of the African Americans in Washington D.C. are at least partially criminals, I got a problem with that guy.
I say, you know, I mean, it's one of those things. You know, it's like we've always said. You know, I said, listen to Ron Paul, but still, I would take, you know, anybody in the Democratic Party over him.
Yeah,
but it's just fun to watch it, just so you can watch the. Every once in a while, watch Sean Hannity have that grimace of pain.
It is a joy, and of course, I also checked out the phony Fred Thompson report or appearance on Jay Leno. And like I said,
you saw how animated he was. You know what I mean? And really, you're full of life. Well, that's the way he always is. Like I say, he's just a little bit ahead of Lamar. And Lamar,
I swear, I watched him on Bozo growing up. I mean, is that a clown face or what?
Take the stuff off Clarabelle, that's him, we swear it is. But, no, you're talking about the missile thing. The thing that got me about the missile was, okay, it wasn't war. Was it five?
Yeah, it was five or six, okay. Conflicting reports.
My brother retired last year. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. And I talked to him about this, and he said, the thing of it is, you've got to remember, whoever's transporting them to that base, there was an officer who was standing by to receive them. That was his job, to receive those things, check them in, you know, wherever they were going. That when this guy loaded them on the plane, somebody had to be standing around screaming, wait a minute, those aren't supposed to be going anywhere without orders. You know, you can't just say, hey, you know,
that's what makes this seem so phony baloney, Luke. I can't believe the whole scenario as it's laid out for us, because it makes it sound like...
And the thing is, you got to remember, like I say, the Air Force, is, like all the military, is paper heavy. It's one of those things. Take that without having orders signed, countersigned, and recountersigned. And dear Lord, with a nuclear missile, there probably has to be five levels of security just to let you know they exist.
Exactly.
I mean, so this wasn't just a oops.
I mean, there's stuff to be signed. There's keys to be turned. You know, because they don't just have these sitting around in a Quonset hut somewhere.
Well, I mean, and the thing is, they're serial numbered, they're color coded. We don't know. We probably wouldn't recognize it, but there's markings on them that if you couldn't read, you could tell what it is by just color codes on them. You know, they'll have different places of paint with different designs.
Or little, that, you know, warning, nuclear bomb.
But I mean,
handle with care.
Color lines on them. You and I wouldn't even know what it means. But somebody in the military, you know, like the one with the red lines, go nowhere. You know,
yeah.
Just for instance, they know that's something you don't touch. That, you know, that's just sort of, oh God, I tell you what.
And you know, and
it's like evidence. It's like a chain of custody.
But I keep reading the stories, and I still don't know where the damn things are now. Are they at Barksdale? Are they at Minot?
Well, and the thing of it is, that's the ones we know of.
What precisely. How many times has this happened before?
Yeah, that no one's noticed. Oh, I'm just taking these out to the training shot, you know, place. You know, these are all just dummy loads.
You know, just going out for a run down the range. And
oh, did you hear? I heard this last night. You did hear about, you know, those of us who are really in favor of, you know, a good strong democracy. But friend Mr. Musharraf's thinking, apparently his numbers in the polls are down. So all of a sudden now he's talking about we may not be able to have elections this year in Pakistan, because apparently Mr. Musharraf is beginning to look more and more like he will not be the winner.
Benazir Bhutto went back. The guy that she took power from went back, and Pakistan, frankly, you know, never mind. Iran, not so much. Pakistan scares the dickens out of me.
I mean, you know, like I say, they're sitting there, you know, and we don't know how many they've got. And, of course, as we all know, you know, I'm sure they're just like the Israelis. We have no nuclear weapons. Please don't step near that building without a decimeter on you, please.
Yeah. Precisely. So, you know,
and the thing was, the thing about Rahm Emanuel, Mr. DLC himself, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a sellout job.
Well, he's been a sellout job. I mean, you know, we talked about that, I think, in 2004 and in 2006 both, that, you know, he was pumping money into any conservative Democrat, but if you were an anti-war or even just a progressive Democrat, well, we'll get you some money somewhere down the line.
Yeah, and what's more, if you're an anti-war Democrat, we will move heaven and earth to find a conservative to run against you in the primary.
And we won't pull for either one of you, but somebody will send somebody a check.
What's her name? Out in Illinois, I mean, she went on to win. She was wounded, a helicopter pilot. They had to move her into the district.
Yeah.
So you know, what does that tell you?
It's like I say, you know, until we get a strong Democratic majority where they can look at the DLC people and say, thank you, now it was nice of you to participate, go stand in the corner.
Precisely. Yeah. And then to see, oh, and tying him into a lecture to Dennis Kucinich, I don't think so. I don't know who this Taylor Marsh person is. I've never listened to her, but.
I have before. She's not bad, you know what I mean, but I haven't listened to her in a while, but it's like Taylor needs to, you know, talk to some other people, because Taylor, quit listening to him. He may say something here and there that you like, but you got to look at the whole of what he's saying. You know, heard something he said, you know, for 5 minutes, he said, that's good. It's like, well, that may be good, but look at the other 95% and go, no, 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 you know.
Yeah, I know.
So, but we'll just have to wait on that, and like say, just remember, we're now in the eighth spread. The man who's going to get out there since he has a nap.
The sun, Sheffield, Alabama's native son.
Oh God! Well, like I say, just always remember Fred the Snitch. That's
yep.
That's our name for him, Fred the Snitch.
Fred the Fraud.
He was, well, you know, the whole Watergate thing is, oh yeah, he's a strong person. Make sure they're holding the Democrats, you know, holding the Republicans, excuse me, feet to the fire. It's like, yeah, and of course he's making those phone calls at night to the Nixon White House, telling them, guess who we got? Guess what you're going to get hit with tomorrow?
I know. And, you know, you got to wonder, now that he's in the race, will he actually participate in the debates?
Well, apparently they slapped him around a little bit good last night, so we'll see how that works. It's going to be interesting. It's like I say, this could end up being a good food fight, which I'll enjoy watching.
Me too. Hey, Luke, you have a great night, all right?
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
And that is it. Upcoming, the best of Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold, who will be live tomorrow night, he says. And I take him at his word. Hard-working man, that Peter Godbold. Thanks, everybody, for calling, for emailing, for listening, for sitting and screaming at your speakers from time to time. We all do appreciate it. We appreciate your support as well. Because this program and this network sort of defines who and what we are. It's amazing. You know, we're a little more than a month away from being 2 years old. That's pretty exciting. So if you can, hit the PayPal button, please. Thanks, Agnes. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Al-Qaeda announced today that a new video from Osama bin Laden will be released soon, just days ahead of next week's sixth anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. The Site Institute said his beard is devoid of gray hair, dyed almost entirely black to make him look younger. The Department of Homeland Security has no credible information of an imminent threat to the U.S. German authorities are searching for more suspects who may be connected to a series of thwarted terrorist bombings there. Places frequented by large numbers of German and Americans were the intended targets. U.S. and Iraqi forces have launched a massive operation targeting al-Qaeda in northern Iraq. At least 26,000 troops are involved. Today, six insurgents were killed. Another 25 of them were arrested. Baghdad authorities say clashes between insurgents and U.S. and Iraqi special forces this morning in a western neighborhood killed at least 14. The Pentagon says 40 militants were killed in a 12-hour battle yesterday in southern Afghanistan. Israeli President Shimon Peres says he is, quote, more optimistic, end quote, about the prospect of peace with the Palestinians. Peres met today with Pope Benedict and Italian leaders in Rome. Israeli warplanes crossed into Syrian territory this morning and bombed a deserted area, according to Syrian news agencies. Syria fired surface-to-air missiles but missed the fighter jets. 16 Saudi Arabian prisoners released from Guantanamo Bay arrived in Riyadh today. The White House has stated repeatedly that the U.S. doesn't want to be the world's babysitter. Many home countries are reluctantly taking detainees back. 11 New Jersey officials have been arrested in an FBI corruption probe, including a mayor and state lawmakers. Democratic campaign donor Norman Hsu, who gave money to Senator Hillary Clinton as well as others, didn't appear in court yesterday. Authorities have expanded the search for missing adventurer Steve Fawcett. His small plane disappeared over in the Nevada desert on Monday on Labor Day. The search is covering 10,000 square